수 있을수록 입술 피해지네. 왜 이렇게? 무슨 말 내가 지었어?
진짜 혹시? Thank you. it's going to be a city, and it's going to be a long day. We must also note that there are members who are also going to attend other committees on the same agenda, particularly on the adoption of their reports and committees, who serve in our this committee. So we'll interface with this agenda within that framework, and hope all of us, including our stakeholders, will adhere to the request we're making. We're doing this with the purpose of advancing our cause for what members have been elected to do, and yourselves appointed in your respective responsibilities to serve our people. I will now invite Honorable Mr. Mathonsi to give apologies and invite stakeholders to introduce their collective, which they are here, and then we'll take presentation as indicated on the agenda. Mr.
Mathonsi? Thank you, Acting Chair. I've got only two apologies, that of the chairperson and Ms. Kanyile. That's all.
Apologies noted. Any other apology, members? Noted. We'll note those apologies. I will invite as per the agenda, for the introduction of the members of our stakeholders. Mr.
Mathonsi? Yes, I think the UNHCR should start introducing their delegation going to the South African Human Rights Commission, the City of Cape Town, and lastly to do with the Department of Home Affairs.
Thank you. In that order.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the members of the Portfolio Committee, and also my counterparts from the Department of Home Affairs, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and also the DG and Deputy DG. I am joined today. My name is Leonard Zulu. I am the UNHCR representative. I am joined by my deputy, Mr. Igor Chabani, and the head of the Cape Town office, Madam Kiran Kao, who can all introduce themselves or show themselves on the camera. I have another commitment, so if I leave, my colleague, the deputy representative, will step in. And there are also other colleagues from the Cape Town office with us, Mishak and Anna, I see, who run the Cape Town office on a day-to-day basis, and also the Senior Protection Officer for South Africa, Mr. Jesus Perez Sanchez. So those are the ones that I can see. If there's anybody from the UNHCR side I have not mentioned, maybe they can show themselves and say hello. But I think that's our team. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you have sufficiently responded in that order.
The chairperson is the South African Human Rights Commission, Commissioner Chris Dixon. Please. Okay, maybe let's move over to the City of Cape Town.
Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. J.P. Smith, Committee Member for Safety and Security, which includes disaster management. I have with me the Chief of Law Enforcement, who's also the Acting Director for Policing and Enforcement Services at the moment, Rudolf Wiltshire, as well as Caroline Knott from the Mayor's Office, and Antoinette Markram, from our legal services. Antoinette will be leading the presentation. I'm currently confined to my cell phone as I'm struggling to connect by the laptop, but I will do that soon. Thank you.
Thank you. In that order, Mr. Matonzi.
Yes, Mr. Christensen, if it's available. Commissioner Christensen. And then let's move over to the department.
Thank you.
Anybody from the department?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the Minister, the Deputy Minister. From the Department of Home Affairs, we joined this morning by my DDG Jackson McKay, responsible for immigration, DDG Tulani Mavuso, responsible for institutional planning and support, and also acting CIO, our CFO, Mr. Gordon Holambi, DDG for HR, Mengidi Mohoboko, and then DDG Thomas Sigama, responsible for civic services. We've also brought in the PM for the Western Cape, Mr. Yusuf Simons, because he's been dealing with some of these issues. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the introduction. Is the indication that the Human Rights Commission, they are not in the meeting, Mr. Matonzi?
Mr. Commissioner Christensen was in the meeting. I'm sure maybe he might be having some connection problems, but there is his assistant, Kaya Dulane. So I'm sure the commissioner will join the meeting later.
Yes, there's a hand from the Human Rights Commission.
Morning, Chair. Morning, ministers. Commissioner was just on the line with me now. He's trying to connect. He's just experiencing a little bit of difficulties, but I will just check up on with him. Sorry about that.
Okay. Thank you, colleagues, for that. Those introductions. We'll go straight and invite the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees to give us a brief report. And I think we know that we've interacted with this matter for some time. We've grappled with it. I think the issues which have been presented in the previous meetings with all the four stakeholders, we know about them. We'll be more interested and focused on the recommendations that we had requested stakeholders to focus on. We know about the historical challenges which were there, which we tried by all means, all of us, to come together in order to assist our African brothers and sisters in that part of the country. So we think that more detail must come on must come out on the areas which the committee has made its impression in terms of the recommendation and how we need to move forward, including your recommendation as stakeholders in terms of the progress made, challenges that you're confronted with, so that you are coming out of this meeting with a clear path on how this matter has been responded. Documents have been circulated already, and members have interacted with the documents or presentation that you will present today. So we think that you're going to give just a brief, but with clear areas which the previous meeting has recommended on about what must happen moving forward. Thank you. It's your time to make the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Leonard Zulu here, representative of UNHCR in South Africa. I will follow your guidance, Chairperson, and get it in the middle of it. The first point that we wanted to make as UNHCR is that we've been working very well with the Department of Home Affairs, the City of Cape Town, and other stakeholders, including the South Africa Police Service and the Prov JOC in Cape Town. And this has been a very collaborative and positive, constructive dialogue that we've been engaging in. So we are quite pleased with all our stakeholders, in particular, our interaction with the minister, the DG and DDG. So thank you very much for that. UNHCR's commitment from the last time that we were here before you, we had committed to support the government, the Department of Home Affairs, with the dispersal of the people on the site, back the reinstallation back into the host communities. That was our primary objective, because they are here in South Africa as refugees, as asylum seekers, and they do not belong on the Winfield site or on the Paint City site. They belong in the community together with the other 266,000 plus refugees and asylum seekers. We've been working on this project together with Adonis Musati project, our implementing partner in Cape Town. And as of my information now, we supported 414 persons from the Wingfield site to move back into the host community. There were no uptakers on the Paint City site. They continued to refuse to move off that site and continued to stay there. This project initially terminated at the end of March, but we reinstated it in April, after the meeting we had in Cape Town, initially targeting 100 persons of concern who had shown that they would be interested to go back to the host communities. But I must also report that once we reinstated that, due to various factors, we saw the interest by the people coming forward to go back into the host community dwindle. At one point, they all said that they wanted to go back. We secured additional funding for that, and we said, okay, come forward. We will assess your needs, you go into the community, find accommodation, and we will pay for 3 months accommodation costs and also settling in costs such as life-saving food and so on for another 3 months. That did not work. Next slide, please. And then our other commitment was that we were going to expand our voluntary repatriation program and to cover people who wanted to go to home. And you will see that as of January 2021, we have repatriated 305 refugees and asylum seekers from South Africa to those three countries: Democratic Republic of Congo, 197, Burundi, 107, and Burkina Faso, 1. Next slide, please. And on the protest sites, initially we had informed you that 121 people from the protest sites had come forward to be assessed for voluntary return. That number rose up to 135. We are able to accommodate all returns, and we have alerted our High Commissioner to this increasing number, and also the Director for the Regional Bureau for Southern Africa, who has assured us that we will be supported with the requisite resources, which we then channel to the International Organization for Migration to actually do the actual movement, the purchasing of the tickets and so on. Of this number, 23 persons have already departed to DRC and Burundi, 22 to Burundi, and 1 to Congo. I think the person had a health condition who went to Congo. So we have directly from these sites repatriated 23, and the majority of the cases are women and children. Next slide, please. Again, we've been on the site. There, Paint City, the group split. I don't know whether the committee knows about this dynamic, the group on Paint City split in two. A larger group of about 330 remained inside, and 122 were expelled outside the fence. And we then targeted the group that was in a vulnerable position out on the streets, outside the tent, to say that, okay, we will prioritize you with assessments to go back into the community. We did that. Unfortunately, NGO that is unknown to us, called Safety Lab, then without consultation, moved this group from the Paint City site to the Wingfield site. And that changed the dynamic. Initially, when we had gone there in March, the 128 had underlined that they were willing to go back into the community. However, when they moved from the Paint City location outside the compound and went to Wingfield, they suddenly had a change of heart. They're, you know, making all sorts of demands that are difficult, if not impossible, for us to meet. They continue asking for resettlement. And on top of that, they want to be moved into the community as a group. As you can imagine, it's not easy to find accommodation for 128 people to live together in close proximity to each other. So that has met its challenges, and I think it has come to a grinding halt. We have told the people on both sides that our assessment and our willingness for people to support reintegration back into the community, the reinstallation back into the host community, will continue until the 15th of May. After that, we can't keep an open-ended program. We will have to prioritize other activities. We have responsibility for 266,000 refugees. We will not continue engaging with a group that is refusing to cooperate with the DHA and refusing to cooperate with UNHCR. So for us, we will disengage on the 15th of May, as we have already underlined to all our stakeholders, that those who want to return to the community will have to do so using their own means. And then we will continue with our voluntary repatriation program, which is the standard program in South Africa. This reinstallation into the host community is not a standard program, and we've had to repurpose funds from other activities in order to make them available for all of them. Actually, I must underline that it is no longer just for the smaller group that we had initially started. We counted all of them, I think 587 or 600, and we have sufficient resources to cover for all of them, but they have to cooperate. And if they don't cooperate, there's nothing we can do. They're adults, they have to be held accountable for their actions, because refugees and asylum seekers are not above the laws of the Republic. Next page, please. So that's why our key messages are those. 1 to 7, topmost respect for the rule of law, and we want them to peacefully return to host communities. We are clarifying the message that resettlement is not on the table for this group. UNHCR, of course, will focus on its regular programming, local integration, inclusion through the provision of social and legal assistance. And those who fall on hard times, we will help with shelter and grants to put life-sustaining food on the table, as we have been doing. So again, it's a reiteration, the last 3 points of what I've just said. So next page, please. I think that is the last one. That is the last one. And there's a need also, we've been working with the DHA on the number of undocumented persons on the site that need to be regularized either through the immigration process or the asylum process, especially those who have expressed interest to return. Around 72 of them, they need to be regularized, either one or the other. And we do have a program to repatriate refugees and asylum seekers, standing program in the country. And also our sister agency, IOM, has also got a program to assist stranded migrants. And also I understand the DHA is in a position to assist people return. And it's important that these sites are discontinued or we close these sites, because the 414 who went into the community, from what we have been receiving, I keep on looking at these sites as a place where they could return if they fall on hard times in the community, and some of them are not even trying to reintegrate. And it's because these sites sort of like present a false beacon of hope that we can return to the site where we can be assisted by other entities to survive, have food, have shelter, and not pay for it. So our concerns are also about more people coming in into these sites, because I think when the people were moved from the Methodist Church, the number, if I recall correctly, was around 800. And then now we're talking about 1,500, 1,600. If you put the numbers of the people who are still there, the numbers we have assisted to go back into the community, and so on and so forth. So there is no access control. People come in and out as they please. Some people just sleep there on a rotational basis, go back into the community to run their informal businesses. Some people have got double accommodation, both on the site and in the host community. So it is just impossible situation to manage. And I think we need to bring this to a closure. Thank you very much. And of course, I reiterate my thanks on the last slide to our counterparts. If the next slide will be shown, it's an expression of gratitude from UNHCR to thank the City of Cape Town, law enforcement, SAP, Department of Home Affairs, Public Works, and the Department of Social Development, who occasionally we work with to see how best we can resolve this situation. But I also would like to thank Honorable Minister for being really a source of guidance and support for all of us, and we very much appreciate his leadership in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the brief report. Can we invite the South African Human Rights Commission?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and Honorable Minister. And may I apologize, first of all, for a little bit of confusion that we created with the first report. That report has been withdrawn. There's a new one that unfortunately we had to circulate this morning. And I really apologize for the confusion, because in the first report, it wasn't supposed to be sent, but the second one, and I apologize to all the members for that. Mr. Khalid Kalan and Zona Morton has been the two monitors that have been monitoring both Wingfield and Payne City, and have been there from the very start, from Green Market Square right up to those two. And I've asked Mr. Kalan just to do the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nissen.
All right.
Can you get that about the what you have?
May I speak? Good morning, honorable members.
No, you. I'm still on the podium. There's a matter you raised, Mr. Nissen. I want just to be clearer whether the report you are referring to is a new report or some addition on the report, so that members are clear, because they might have read. If the totally new report, it means they've read the wrong report. So just clear that part, and then we will be able to proceed. Thank you, Mr. Nissen.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apologies. The report that we sent on the 6th or 7th of May has a number of other information. And then yesterday in consultation, we decided to withdraw that report and then resend a shorter version of that report. and it was sent to the secretary of the portfolio committee. And I really apologize for the chairperson. And consultation, we felt it was the wrong, lots of information that's not necessarily needed in that report. And we have a shortened version of the report, which focused only on Wingfield and on.
Okay. No, I think we're clear. I think I want
and thank the chairperson.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Your submission has been noted. I wanted members and other stakeholders so that you move from the page the report. Thank you. You can continue.
Thank you, Chair, for understanding. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Minister.
So, good morning, honourable members. Can I just check whether the new report has been shared and can be displayed on the screen?
Yes, I'm just busy downloading it now. This is Adam.
Okay.
Oh no, Eddie's got it. Okay, Eddie's got it. Thanks.
Kaya, can you please slide the report as agreed? Kaya?
Noted, Mr. Eddie.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nathaniel Roloff. I'm the director of the Safety Lab. I have a point of order question. Because I have disagreements with the way that I was referred to in the representation from the UNHCR, would now be a good time to discuss those disagreements.
Eddie, what is it? What is
it? I have no idea, and I don't know who's this person.
Can we move to the presentation of Human Rights Commission?
Kaya.
I'm just opening it up now. Sorry about that.
Okay, I can share in the meantime, I think, just to delay, to prevent any further delays.
So good morning, honorable members, and the portfolio committee. This is the presentation before you is quite extensive, and so I'm going to, I think, just speak to the report. The South African Human Rights Commission has a mandate to a global mandate, omnibus mandate to protect and promote human rights in South Africa, and in terms of the South African Human Rights Act, it also established a Section 11 committee in terms of monitoring the rollout and adherence and compliance to the disaster management regulation. So it's in with that context that this particular presentation is also done. It's a monitor's report in terms of Section 11 of the South African Human Rights Act. Members are aware of the background to this the situation, the protest action that happened in the CBD in 2019, and then in March, April of last year, when the Disaster Management Act regulations kicked in and the
Mr. Matonsi, it appears the Human Rights Commission is stuck on network. Are you back? Mr. Kaya?
Known as Paint City.
Yeah, Mr. Kaya, you are breaking.
I'm sorry,
I think
about that.
Network, yeah, you can continue. Now we can hear you.
Now, much better. Yes. So if we can move to the next slide, please. So Wingfield was home to initially about 450 members. Because of a range of factors, that the number grew at Wingfield. And similarly, at Paint City, we also eventually housed more than 1,000 people. I really want to maybe move on to closer slide 21 on this particular slide. If you can just move to that, please. So contains a report from the safety lab in relation to the Wingfield site. And the safety lab and the Philippi village have been two CSOs that have been really incredibly busy at the Wingfield site in supporting the humanitarian needs of the of that resident population. One of the things that's been a hallmark of the establishment of these two sites has been a lack of overall management of the site. In fact, at both sites, the resident populations were allowed to self-manage the sites. And that we want to flag as an issue, given that both sites were set up under the Disaster Management Act regulation.
Mr. Kaya, your network is disrupting. Where you are, I think if you can.
And ensure that there was proper service delivery at the site. One of the biggest bones of contention throughout the past year has been access control.
Chairperson, can we kindly get this issue resolved? Because I think it's really disrupting us.
Mr. Nissan, Mr. Kaya, your network is bad. You are unable to.
Okay, let me try and connecting through
What you can do is to work on the summary of the presentation. The network is struggling because the documents we have it, and talk to the issues which were there, and members, when they interact with yourself and the commissioner, you will be able to make more input. Otherwise, you will be disrupted by the network where you are located.
All right. So then let me just speak to the summary, Acting Chair.
Okay. Mr. Kaya, let's do like this, members. Let's allow Mr. Kaya to find the proper network and we invite the Home Affairs.
Yeah.
The presentation immediately, Kaya will come back with the summary of the meeting. I think let's use that framework.
Chairperson, yes? I would suggest that he tries presenting with his video off. It might also assist.
Oh, yes.
Maybe
okay.
If you can.
Mr. Kaya?
I will do that. I'm also going to connect with a different device. So, but perhaps we go ahead with the other presentation and then return to the Human Rights Commission presentation. If that's fine.
Yeah. Thank you. Can we invite the Home Affairs? City of Cape Town. Councillor.
Yeah, are you asking us to present or Home Affairs?
No, sorry, I didn't check properly the agenda. City of Cape Town, Councillor Smith.
Yeah, the presentation will be undertaken by Antoinette Markram.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you the City of Cape Town's presentation. Can I just say that this presentation was submitted prior to the Department of Home Affairs submitting their presentation, and because of that, certain information was not included in this presentation. Excuse me. All right, so the City of Cape Town's participation in the process and the intervention is under discussion, as you know, led by SAP's provincial JOC.
Very difficult for cities to enforce bylaws in those situations because they're technically allowed to gather. And my question to you, though, is at what stage do you get to a point where you say that this is no longer a human rights or a xenophobia issue, and that other laws must then take their course? Because there appears to be a gap in the Gatherings Act that really, if it wasn't there, if we reverse all the way back to the beginning, then we probably would have been able to resolve the situation right at the beginning. Another question is on your slide about the timeline and running out of steam, where service delivery stops on January the 21st. Was that Public Works that pulled out at that stage? If you can just confirm that. Then, you know, the Human Rights Commission mentions the need for intergovernmental cooperation. And it's something that this committee called for way back in October 2019. So from a Human Rights Commission point of view, it seems that your intervention to move people out of Paint City to Wingfield was done unilaterally. Was this agreed with Prof Jock? And did you consult the UNHCR when you decided to move the people? Then a question to the Minister of Home Affairs, bearing in mind these inputs about intergovernmental cooperation, in terms of the lessons learned, how would you handle the situation in the future? Are there standard operating procedures being developed for the future for these situations, whether it's from the start at the UNHCR or whether it's when it gets to this point where we have the situation where there's some encampment going on? Chairperson, to close off, funding is clearly problematic here, and there's a gap here as well. Now, the National Action Plan to combat racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance, it actually calls for the establishment of a rapid response mechanism, and that Cabinet should allocate funding for such a mechanism. And this clearly needs to be investigated. I don't know if the Minister can give us any indication from a Cabinet point of view of whether this rapid response mechanism is being discussed and how far we are in terms of the funding of that. Because if it's unfunded, you know, then the other option is that we require stakeholders, we require an intergovernmental approach led by Home Affairs or the SAPs or both or NatJoints. It's a national competency with clear stakeholders. So my question to the minister is, which one is it going to be? Does it look like we're going for the rapid response mechanism that will be funded, or is Home Affairs going towards a intergovernmental approach that is coordinated, perhaps even by NAT joints, on how to handle these situations in the future? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Ruas, for those inputs. Honorable Lofase. Okay, we'll come back to her. Honorable Mulikwa. No, sorry, Honorable Tito.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentations presented today by all stakeholders. Chairperson, I also want to acknowledge the progress made so far and also appreciate the working togetherness by all stakeholders to deal with this matter. I don't have any question but to note and welcome the report as presented and the progress made thus far, and encourage all other stakeholders to put more effort in dealing with the remaining person so that we bring this matter to rest, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson, and I also welcome the presentation made by all the stakeholders. Chair, I have only three questions. One question is on the city of Cape Town. When will they finish the reintegration process of the migrants who do not volunteer for repatriation? And also the second question, Chair, is what is the financial breakdown of maintaining the two first campsites from March 2020 until they will be demolished? And then on the part of Home Affairs, Chair, the minister indicated to us that them removing the refugees from there, it was actually part of the, it was under the disaster regulations, and then there was not money, enough money, and then they went to Treasury, then the Treasury advised them that if they use money from their side, it will be irregular expenditure, and then they said that there was some money that was received from the UNHCR, and the UNHCR assisted only for ablution facilities at Bain City for 90 days. Can they indicate to us how much was that money that the UNHCR assisted with? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tito. Honorable Modise.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Only two questions from my side. Firstly, I'm interested in knowing who will be taking care of the funding of those members who are not going to be repatriated back into their countries, and equally who will not be going back and reintegrated into the communities. So I think it's a number of about 350, including children, who will be left in those refugee camps. So I want to know that the funding who will continue then taking care of those personnel. Secondly, the UNHCR indicated that the members will be integrated in communities. They will take care of their renting needs and food needs, if I'm not mistaken, for a period of 3 months. Now, I want to know that should those members not be able to get employment or be able to sustain their lives beyond the 3 months, what then happens to those members? Does the department or the UNHCR itself do a follow-up or have a monitoring mechanism to go back to those members and to see and check if they've integrated well and are able to sustain their livelihoods in those communities? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the departments and the City of Cape Town and the UNHCR, everyone who made presentations today. I think most of my questions have been covered, but I want to ask, in terms of these, the individuals who are not willing to be repatriated or even be reintegrated back into communities, at some stage while we were dealing with these presentations in the past, we actually spoke about the need to engage the ambassadors of the countries of origin or the country representatives of the individuals coming from Burundi, the DRC, Malawi, Tanzania, all of the countries that have been mentioned. So I wanted to know whether the Department of Home Affairs have engaged some of these country representatives to assist them, in particular with the hardliners that are quite clearly, you know, gearing themselves up for a confrontation with the state. Because I think at the end of the day, as much as this has become our problem, the problem that we're facing, you know, with these individuals not wanting to comply with our laws and regulations, it is also the responsibility of their countries of origin. So have we engaged some of these country representatives? If not, why not? With regards to our department and considering your own budget limitations, how much have you now spent or reprioritized from your budget for the payment of these facilities, the ablution facilities and the tents? With regards to the deportations that were affected, were they all paid for by the UNHCR or did some of these deportations come from our budget, from our DHA budget? If I can just get clarity in that regard. And then I'm in particular perturbed by the mention that some of these hardliners specifically at the Pain City site will be using children as shields if it comes to that. And I would like to know what assistance did you ask Department of Social Development to provide you with? Is it that you want them to deploy social workers to these sites? Maybe you can just give me clarity on what you expect from the Department of Social Development to assist you, because I really don't know how, you know, what really they can offer you in terms of assistance in this regard. And then I think I want to echo what Honorable Ruiz said. We really thank the UNHCR for their generous offer to these individuals in terms of taking them back to their countries of origin or even paying their rent. But I think, you know, when it's all said and done, when this situation is hopefully resolved, you know, the problem becomes that at the end of the day, it seems like we have got a problem in terms of how we process, you know, these asylum seeker refugees that come into our country. We've got a backlog of 200 asylum seeker applications, which I know we have made a plan for. But also in one of the previous presentations last year, the AG told us that there's possibly 900,000 inactive Section 22 permits within South Africa, plus reports that we've received of possibly 15 million undocumented migrants in South Africa. So the bigger picture for me then becomes we've got a problem in terms of how we're able to document or process people. And maybe the question then becomes to the minister and the UNHCR, I know we do not have an encampment policy, but is it not possibly time for a review? If you look at how other countries in the US and Europe treat or process refugees once they come into their countries. Maybe the question is for the minister, do you think we should review the non-encampment policy? And to the UNHCR, what advice can you give South Africa in terms of going forward? What can we do to not find ourselves in a similar situation? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Honorable Nkwinu.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and also the presentations. So I'm trying to open my video. I don't know why it's not opening. Okay. I've checked out the presentations and all of that, and I think that we should take a leave to what the chairperson said that. I think that in the recurring meetings of this nature, I think we should have been done an hour ago. We know what is the issues, the background and all of that. I think some of the presentation have we managed to actually cover that, but we wanted to look onto the progress. And I think that the presenters have managed to tone down on their presentation to focus on the progress because we know what happened before. So I hope that it will be the tempo that will happen in other meetings because we're not new. We know what are the issues. Mine is to the only presentation that I could not get what was it all about. It was the presentation from the city of actually Cape Town in a nutshell. I don't know if they were saying that now the jokes are sitting, that departments are cooperating, and there seems to be a sense of working together. I think that was the one is to get from the clarity of the city of the Cape Town, and also trying to advise even the leadership that is here, the city of Cape Town, the United Nations, the human rights, not to be, it looks as if now we are moving to a stage where force will be used. I know the experience, in Cape Town, maybe those police are ready for action. I think that the proposal put on the table in terms of being allowed to integrate into the community is fair, and the other one, if a person wants to go back home, they can go back. I think that the one of actually going to another country, I think that it is not really fair, but I will have to look into it in terms of, I don't think it's really fair. What I wanted to propose, Chairperson, is to say, is there a way that we can find out, because the people who don't want to get reintegrated into the community, is there a way that we can find some kind of a documentation, maybe some kind of interaction with those people? Maybe a delegation from the committee, one or two people, to really get to tell them that this is the situation that is happening now at this point in time. We reached a point where the disaster management phase is coming to an end and all those things, and they will be required to be reintegrated back into the community, maybe to hear before these drastic steps can be taken, forced evictions and all of that. Is there a way that maybe ourselves, we can try to satisfy ourselves and maybe lend an ear? Maybe there's something beyond. Maybe we can advise and provide some leadership that is there. And then maybe we can let the department know in terms of what's going on. Because it is concerning that, being given to be reintegrated, but you don't want to. And I ask myself, but why would you not? Because they allow you to actually go back into the community. So I wanted that, Chair. I don't know that it will be a possibility and all of that. That's to listen to those people. And also they must maybe in a form of the letter, maybe addressed to us, but no, we don't want to go back to the integration because of 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then they can all put their names and all of that, so that we know that it is coming from actually, and they don't want to, to be taken back. Now, I wanted to also to speak on the human rights. On the Human Rights Commission. I wanted to check, did they find any human rights violation when they did their inspection? Because currently or before that, it was reported that people are living in bad places, the place is dirty, there's no, rooms where there can be privacy and all of that. So I didn't get that report from them. They were quite reporting as if they've given up also. I thought maybe they will appraise us in terms of, are there any human rights violations that are happening there? And then what are they going to do about it and make sure that it is not actually done? And now also on the UN, comrades who's there, he must not give up. He looks at the person that has given up, hey, look, on the 15th, I'm getting away. There will be nothing at all. That's not leadership. We must find a solution. We must be able to persuade those individuals, find, and even if maybe the chair can be called in and all of that, so that we can make the people to understand. But I think on this platform, it is very disheartening and maybe discouraging. You find leadership says that I've done everything and throw hands in the air. Those are not what we want to want here. We want a way that people will show leadership and all of that. So I think that shared, those are my, I think that all the other comrades, the other committee members have actually covered me on these other issues. So in those two ones, I think that just to certify myself, but these people, they don't want to go back to the community. And what is the main reason? Because it looks as if it is a suggestion that is, valid. But why would you not want to actually, go back? And then City of Cape Town, don't rush. Let us not be agitated and say we're going to take down things. Let's see how can we provide leadership and see if we are able to reintegrate these people. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Joko, for your contributions. Honorable Lukwase.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I am sorry for my network and my gadget problem. Chair, let me not dwell much on the discussions as previous speakers have spoken and have been in and out. But Chair, maybe let me start by acknowledging and noting all presentations that have been brought before the committee and the work that has been done by UNHCR since the beginning of this matter. Chair, let me just ask one question maybe to the department to say, one would have an interest of knowing the status of these people after they've been integrated in our communities. What will their status be after being processed and be integrated? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jose, for your contributions. Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Chair, firstly, I must say that I'm quite pleased and satisfied with the work that has been done, but also to say that there has to be finality on this matter, and I think that's what we are all moving towards. Chair, I'm very concerned, and I think other members have raised this, and this is in regards to the 350 people that do not want to be integrated, cannot be sent home, and are just adamant that they won't move and they're just not going to go anywhere. Now, I want to help my fellow honorable member by saying that if you listened to the honorable minister earlier in his presentation, he did already indicate, and if that's the case, that these people don't want to move because they want to be sent to or relocated to Canada. Now, we can't allow for such where we are now being put in a corner. In fact, it sounds like we're actually being held ransom within our country to say that we're going nowhere unless it's going to Canada. And we can't make those decisions. We cannot be able to, as a country, send them to Canada. So I think it's important that the department tells us what our legal recourse is in regards to these 350 people. And if needs be, then we have to be able to go that route legally to be able to resolve the issue. Because, you know, if you hear the presentation and how we want to deal with it, is that we separate women and children from men. Men go to prison. It means that, again, the state takes care of them. But again, what happens, like my fellow colleague has asked, what happens to those women and children? How do you take care of them? The other thing I think we just need to be cautioned about, Chairperson, is the manner in which we deal with that when we get to that point, because we do not want a media spectacle around this. But I think it's important that the narrative that we set is to indicate that we have exhausted all options in affording them an opportunity to be either reintegrated or to be deported, and they've chosen not to take that. And I think it's important that we must be able to bring finality. And for me, I think the only way to do that is to do it legally and to be able to close on that matter. But I hope that we can be able to bring finality to this. And Chair, the last thing I want to say is that we have to be concerned that with the rise of numbers in terms of COVID, there's a risk of having people congregating in large numbers. And I think it's important that we have to be able to close this chapter and be able to allow people's lives to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, for all your contributions. And I think if you will listen to all of you, there's an indication of guidance on how we must move in terms of a recommendation to that point. And I think we must also note that, as I indicated earlier in our opening remarks, that this matter has been seized with So we know it by detail. And I'm happy that members are able to explore that area and focus on what must happen, taking from the progress made by all the presentation. We're going to receive responses as comments. Those that are not going to be okay. There's a hand of Zona Morton. Zona, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. My apologies. I think the sound on my side is a bit soft. I'm going to try my best. If you can hear me, if you can just nod. If you can hear me clearly, can you just nod?
Yeah, I can hear you. We can hear you. Yes,
thank
yes Zona.
Just to answer one of the honourable members in terms of the human rights violations, that was quite extensively in my...
No. Zona.
So...
Zona, yes, we're not running like that, the meeting. Wait for members to guide how we're going to appreciate
okay,
your response.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you. We're going to receive responses from as follows. We'll get UNHCR, we'll get Human Rights Commission, we'll get the City of Cape Town, we'll get the Director General, we'll get the Deputy Minister, we'll get the Minister. Now, we request that be specific to the issues members raised and recommended so that we're able to have a proper summary in terms of how we're going to move to the stage that members are recommending. So we I'll give each responses at least 3 minutes to deal with the specific. Members are very clear on the issues that they were raising because we're moving from a particular background on this matter. We're clearer and we request you to be precise on the issues that they raised. Human Rights, UNHCR.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the floor. My name is Igor Ciobanu, Deputy Representative, and I will try to address some questions which were asked. So the about the question, how much facilities were costing UNHCR? I have consulted with our colleagues from program, and they stated that it was about 48,000 per month, which for 3 months, 90 days we paid, it amount to about 148. Were paid by UNHCR. UNHCR is not supporting deportation. UNHCR is supporting voluntary return. And in this process, we have a procedure of discussing with everyone, ensuring that their return is voluntary, and in country of return, there are conditions to return. Otherwise, we'll be looking for other options and other solutions, which will be discussed by UNHCR with relevant authority, and first of all, with Ministry of Home Affairs and Department of Home Affairs. With this occasion, I should thank again Minister of Home Affairs, Honorable Dr. Mozzaledi, who recently signed a number of exchange of letters for voluntary return, determining the framework which we are working on this return. Even those return which are processed by IOWEB, it's also part of UNHCR program based on an agreement and paid by UNHCR. IOWEB also has a number of programs on stranded migrants and assistant voluntary return for persons not in need of international protection, and it is processed separately. On the question of if we should review and promote a new policy related to encampment, UNHCR is a guest of camps, and this is very much appreciated also that government of South Africa is also against of encampment of persons. We are promoting all reintegration or local integration of persons in need of international protection, and we are supporting some of this program. They are good example in communities. Recently in March and in April, we visited a number of communities, me and Representative Zulu, together with colleagues from our office in Cape Town. We visited a number of good examples of integration. For example, one person who is opening a pizza shop, and he is not only employing refugees, he has four refugees employed in his pizza shop and three local persons, which this type of integration and cooperation, it's to be promoted and to be expanded as much as possible. Also, we are I don't know if I missed any questions. I think Honorable Adrian Ross asked, did you consult with UNHCR on 128 persons who were moved from Pain City? I should said here that UNHCR is working with its implementing partner Adonis Moussatis project, and Adonis Moussatis project successfully reintegrated more 414 persons. They also did the assessment of 128 persons, which were in front of Pain City. However, when in process, during the night, it was, they were moved to Wingfield. Those, their demands started to change, and they wanted to be moved in groups. They started to put out other conditions for return to communities, which it's complicated the process. However, Adonis Moussatis project staff, it's working there. I should say that, sorry for continuing, but I should say that we were pleased by cooperation between DHA and UNHCR, especially in terms of undocumented person who are coming and being documented, because this is one of more gesture or the process which was allowed by DHA to give a chance to those who are not documented to review their status.
Okay.
Thank you very much. This is my response to questions were addressed to UNHCR.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll also appreciate that those responses, if they can be in writing for purpose of members. I will invite Human Rights Commission.
Chairperson, thank you so much. Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, members. I'll respond to two of these issues and I'll ask Khalid to respond. Very briefly, On the issue of rights, I think we must be very, very careful. I think it's Honorable Ross that asked it. Yes, we do live in a constitutional democracy and people have the right to protest. But we also must understand there comes a responsibility. And the Human Rights Commission does not work outside that mandate given to us by the Constitution, Chapter 2. So we must be very careful with it. Yes, but there are many times that we see that there's an irresponsibility on behalf of on the side of protesters. With regard to human rights violations at both sites, and it's not refugee camps, it's sites where the protesters are. One is that, of course, the right of the children to go to school. And that is caused by the parents that are there. When we, during COVID-19 lockdown level 5 and 4, were the health department of the Western Cape and the city went there and they were chased away. So the right to health has been done by the residents there themselves. And water and sanitation, we've been working together with the city and the other 11 stakeholders and the NGOs. I must also say that the beginning of when we tried to reintegrate the first few families, number of families, the city and the Human Rights Commission cooperated very well under Director Roberts to reintegrate about the number of people that we talked about. But we've also, the Human Rights Commission, have been working around the clock, not only in terms of monitoring, but also try and seek solutions and influencing and do whatever we had to do to make sure that we diffuse volatile situations, and we'll continue to do so. Chairperson, with your permission, and may I please again apologize for the confusion of the two reports and to the minister as well, may I just ask Khalid to just conclude on this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, proceed. Yes, just 2 minutes.
Just a few moments. I just want to confirm that it was the Department of Public Works who were providing the services at Paint City that were then withdrawn at the end of January. And at Wingfield, it was the City of Cape Town who withdrew service provision on the 15th of April. And subsequently, at both sites, other actors then had to take over the provision of services. I wanted to also just respond on the intergovernmental cooperation. That was also a question posed by Honorable Member Ruiz, and asking about the move of people from the Paint City site to the Wingfield site. So that was one, that wasn't done by the South African Human Rights Commission. It was done by one of the NGOs that has been providing humanitarian support to the residents at Wingfield. And that was in response to a humanitarian crisis that had been in place for about 10 days. So people were living without shelter, without access to wash facilities, water sanitation, ablution facilities for more than 10 days. On the pavement outside the Paint City site. So certainly to the Honorable Member, the obligation of the state to provide that under the lockdown conditions didn't disappear. And so in fact, the move to the Wingfield site, which is where lots of the reintegration was happening from, made a lot of sense. So I think it has to be seen in the context of that. Also just want to respond to the comment about the Regulation of Gatherings Act. This started out as a protest from April 2020. It has then been a matter that involved the disaster management and the state of emergency regulation. So we've got to separate these two. The group at Paint City has maintained its protest demands, absolutely, but we're dealing up until now and until those sites come down with the regulations under the Disaster Management Act. One of the issues that I don't think was ever clarified in terms of the confusion in terms of intergovernmental regulations and coordination was why the funding for these sites didn't actually come in terms of the regulations and from the national COVID command center. So given that this was a state of emergency, the president had indicated already that special funding was being provided for issues that come out from the regulations. One of the things that's never really been answered was why the payment for these sites didn't come via that way. But I leave that up to you. And then just to say that the Regulation of Gatherings Act applies to all protests. There's nothing in the RGA that prohibits the city from applying its bylaws. The issue at the church was that you had a private landowner, the church, and that they would have needed to evict people from the church. That was the issue. It didn't have anything really to do with the RGA. The right to protest is one that everybody in South Africa, whether you're foreign or local, has. That is
okay. Protected. Thank you very much for your responses. City of Cape Town, Councillor JP Smith and your colleague.
Chairperson, let me just make sure that I'm visible to you.
Yes, thank you.
All right, sir, thank you. There were questions around the process of reintegration of refugees, and I think the presentations by various stakeholders clarified that this was not something that would be undertaken by the city. That's not a city competency. The question as to the cost of the tents, I can clarify. To date, the tents have, the Wingfield site has cost us 6,771,386 rand. That does not include all the costs and overtime and police presence and the additional amenities. So if we had to do a more complete calculation, it would come to somewhat more than that. I think it should be said that the city has really tried to support all these interventions and the intergovernmental discussions in good faith, and have gone beyond our sort of narrow constitutional role in this regard, as the financial contribution demonstrates. I don't think much more can really be said than what was very competently expressed by the minister and by the DHA and UNHCR reports. They very eloquently explained the situation where we find ourselves, and that whilst we know the very best is being done to attempt to reintegrate people, if there is at the end of that a group that adamantly resist any form of reintegration, then the sites both belong to the Department of Public Works, and that them as a property owner, they will then be obligated to at some point determine how to remove persons from those properties. And that will have to take the form of an eviction application to court. In the meantime, the cost being incurred is a problem because the Auditor General has now made it clear that the city cannot legally incur these costs. It is beyond our competency, as we have been saying over the last more than half a year, that whilst we did so under the original shelter provision, and there is a current shelter provision, but the original shelter provision compelled the city to do so. The current shelter provision simply says we must identify shelters. And if we had to identify shelters, we would point to the current safe spaces and homeless shelters, which still have some spare capacity. Originally, we incurred these costs in good faith, understanding a shorter period or anticipating a shorter period of lockdown than was in the end the reality, which I think applies to everybody. Nobody expected the lockdown to proceed this long when it was initially declared. And so we are now caught in this situation where we can't legitimately and legally incur further costs, but that until the eviction is undertaken, all people are voluntarily reintegrated, the costs continue to increase. So at some point, a final discussion will need to take place between the city and province and national as to those in increasing cost as per the letter of the provincial DG in which he committed province and the city to those costs, because the city has now been given very clear instructions by the AG as to what we can and cannot incur costs on as a local government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Councillor Smith, for your contribution on behalf of the City of Cape Town. I'm going to invite the Director General.
Thanks so much, Chair. I'll address three issues that we raised. The first one is the related to the costs that we have incurred to date. And then I'll ask DDG MIK to respond to issues around the engagements we're having with social development. And then Mr. Eustace Simons will respond to the question asked by Honorable Lukwase on the legal status. So on the cost, Honorable Chair, we're there to reprioritize about 2 million rand from our travel and accommodation budget. And for the Marquis in particular, the question that was asked how much we pay, we were able to negotiate with the service provider to pay at least 499,000 for a period of 3 months. And then for the ablution facilities, it's about 749,685,000. And that's also for a period of 3 months. We are still, Chair, just to indicate that we have written to the City of Cape Town, as indicated by Mr. J.P. Smith, that as part of the agreement with the Western Cape Provincial Government, the Department of Home Affairs and the Provincial Government have agreed that from the 15th of April, we will incur the costs. So we're waiting for the city to bill us on that so that we know what is it that we will be paying. So let me then request DDG MacKay to respond to the other two questions, and then Mr. Simons, through you, Chair. Thank you.
DDG MacKay.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister and Deputy Minister, and everybody in the meeting. I will talk to the issue around what assistance, I think asked by Honorable Van der Merwe, in terms of what assistance we expect from the Department of Social Development. Commissioner Nissen spoke to the issue of the right to education. These children have been denied a right to attend school or education for more than a year. And we expected the Department of Social Development by now to have acted either by removing those children from their parents who are denying them this right and placing them in places of safety where they would be able to pursue their education. And also the fact that these children are used as human shields are placing them right in danger. And this is also in contradiction of the Children's Act, which talks to the protection of children. So we believe that the Department of Social Development has a mandate to act against the parents in terms of removing those children and placing them in places of safety where they will be safe from harm as well as be able to attend school. The other issue that that was raised by Honorable Van der Merwe was the issue around whether where we find ourselves now, is it because of, as a result of our failure of our immigration laws or asylum and refugee regulations? No, I do not believe that is the case, Honorable Chair. You will recall that this was a protest action by a few asylum seekers and refugees seeking resettlement to third countries. Now, we have just over 260,000 refugees and asylum seekers in South Africa who are integrated and living in communities. And this number of 1,000, let's say over 1,600 protesters are less than 1%. It's about 0.5 or 0.6% of refugees and asylum seekers in South Africa. So it cannot be seen as a failure of our laws, rather that it is a protest action in that they want to be resettled to third countries. Chairperson, and then the last issue was the question raised by Honorable Lekhwasi in terms of what will the status be of the persons that will be integrated. These persons will retain their legal status that they have in South Africa, being that of asylum seekers, if their claims have not been finalized yet, and refugees, if they have been granted that status in South Africa. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think the Mr. McKay has also responded to the matter that the DG has referred. Unless there's another information around that response, DG, can I establish before I go to DM and the minister?
No, I'm covered, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a few issues. One, I think that Honorable Pillay is quite correct when he says that we must need closure on this matter, and that is what the Department of Home Affairs is moving towards very quickly. We, however, need the support of all the stakeholders, including the Portfolio Committee, particularly on speaking on one voice on the actions that we take, so that we don't create a situation when we have to act today and then tomorrow we have to reverse because of other discussions that are happening and the change of the narrative in terms of media and other media holdings. So we have to really speak in one voice, and we have to be very firm on taking decisive action on this issue, particularly around issues of the abuse of human rights, because when people say that human rights are being violated whilst they deny children a right to go to school, whilst you know, they make people live under conditions that are not desirable, I think that cannot be tolerated. They cannot come and scream human rights whilst they themselves are really abusing human rights. So our action has to be in the best interest of those children who are living there. We have really not been getting a chance to go to school. So the sooner we move towards reintegration, the better. That is what we think we need to deal with. And also, I don't think, Chair, it is factual to say that Home Affairs has not really done the work that they are supposed to, and that we are leaving it to the city of Cape Town. I believe that we all have a responsibility to share as various government institutions, and that is what has been happening. And the progress that has been made has been literally because of our ability to work together. So I don't think that we need to say that there are some responsibilities that Department of Home Affairs was responsible for but did not take up. I don't think that is correct. And also, I agree with Honorable Mkhwanazi when we say that integration is the best option, but it needs us to be firm. We cannot have a situation where we provide for reintegration and there are those who refuse, and then we call it a stalemate. We have to find ways of applying the law and making sure that those who integrate. Those who seek to go back to their countries, we facilitate that particular process. The minister has been very, you know, has been very proactive in the engagement with other ambassadors. He's been leading those engagements, but I'm sure he will deal with the outcomes of those engagements himself when he comes to the floor. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think most of the questions have really been answered, and I just want to summarize. I think there are important questions, Chair, which were posed by Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe, especially the issue of engaging ambassadors and what they are saying. As the Deputy Minister has said, we've always been engaging ambassadors including having a physical meeting with ambassadors of the countries where most of the people come from, notably DRC and Burundi. At that time also, Ethiopia attended. The ambassador of DRC, by the way, I've just spoken to him, I think it's about 5 days ago. He told me that among those people, especially those who are hardlining, they've actually also declared him a persona non grata. He said they are very, very arrogant to him and his approaches as the ambassador of DRC to talk to the people there. When we deport, the people who have said have been deported after Rasa and Skra have assessed them and realized that they definitely don't deserve any international protection. We called ambassadors. Nobody gets deported to their country without their ambassadors undersigning it. We called them to Lindela. They sit down and talk to them, and they give them certificates to move, to agree to move to those countries. For instance, in the DRC, when we were deporting, there were 40 people. We had to hire a chartered flight. We had to get landing rights in DRC. It took us a whole month to acquire those landing rights, working with the ambassador, him phoning back home for them to allow us to land in the DRC and even accept the people back. So we're working very well with the ambassadors on this issue. But on the ones that are hardlining, the ambassadors are saying it's also difficult for them because they also get dismissed. I'm not sure why this should be surprising. Let me take you back to when the people were in the church. Honorable Mqini is asking us to call church leaders, etc. That, by the way, has already been done when they were protesting in the church. You may remember that church leaders there were assaulted, including Reverend Chris Nissen, who is on this platform from the South African Human Rights Commission. They were assaulted when they went there. And the reason that we asked them to go there was maybe the protesters will understand the church when it explained to them the position of United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee. Remember, at that time, the High Commissioner for Refugee has already explained that there is no mechanism under which they can take people as a group to Canada. And I don't want to keep on saying a third country because I know that these people want to go to Canada. This story of third country is just trying to camouflage their mission. They want to go to Canada. So when the United Nations wrote letters to explain and they were not understanding, church leaders were sent there to explain that position. And that's a long time ago. And they were assaulted. And I'm not saying we must not send them there again. The question then, Honorable Van der Merwe, is what is driving people? And I think it is what the ambassador of DRC has explained, that many of the people, some of those people, especially these hardliners, did not come here because they are asylum seekers or they are refugees. They came specifically en route to Canada. He says some of them were recruited right from home that they must go to Canada. Maybe honorable members need to understand why is this mission to Canada a matter of life and death? In Canada, there is a province called Quebec, which is French speaking. As you can see, the majority of the protesters are also French speaking. But secondly, because the indigenous Canadians ended in Quebec during colonialism, the government of Canada, being very progressive now these days, have showered that region with lots and lots and lots of social services, which we cannot afford as South Africa. I mean, Canada is far more economically advanced than us. So as South Africa and the countries from which the protesters originated, there is no way we can afford anything that people in Quebec are getting. That is what they are targeting. We are made to understand that some of them went to extent of selling all they own in the DRC, all their properties, sell them because they are en route to Canada, sell everything, put the money in a bag and rush to South Africa where they were hoping that by protesting, by being very hard, by making sure that there's no cooperation, the United Nations will finally relent and send them to Canada. That is what they are still believing. You may remember that even in the past few days, when the DG and United Nations went there to distribute the pamphlets in all languages, one of them was still saying so, that no, we're going nowhere, because they are determined to go to Canada, because that was the mission right from the beginning. And I want honorable members to realize that this is what we are faced with. You might even have forgotten that last year, when they were still in the church, I even approached the deputy minister of migration and citizenship in Canada, who I met at the United Nations, I mean, at the EUA conference in Paris, just before the lockdown. And I discussed this issue with her, and she told me straight that Canada will never allow people who settle as a group, because people who resettle to third countries must apply as individuals. Lastly, Chairperson, I want Honorable Mpini to please agree with us that in any situation around the country, around the world, where the issue of human rights is discussed, that human rights go hand in glove with responsibilities. Any person who demands human rights or who must receive human rights has equally a responsibility to take responsibility for certain actions. And this is not what we are getting in this case. So we are not necessarily taking drastic steps, meaning what Honorable Pile has said must eventually happen. This matter must come to an end. Now, the challenge Honorable Mpini is putting to the committee, I will encourage the committee to go there and listen. He said, let's listen to them. Maybe they've got a reason why they don't want to settle. That, I can assure you, they've said it many times, and I can tell you what they are going to tell you. They are going to tell you that they are killed in and around the communities in Cape Town. Now, the United Nations have already mentioned that those who were integrated, nobody attacked them, nobody killed them. But if you go to the judgment passed by Judge Tulare when they were still in the church, he dealt with this matter thoroughly and dismissed it, that there was no indication and there's no proof that anybody is being killed in Cape Town because he's a refugee and an asylum seeker. And it has already been proven by those who have already been integrated. But they incessantly say they are doing what they are doing, not cooperating because they are being killed. And that is what they will tell members of the committee. But I will still encourage members of the committee to go and hear it themselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members, for paying attention to the details on this matter. The deliberations were good. And I think we have a clarity of how we're going to move. The conclusion of the UNHCR in their presentation commends all the stakeholders. And I think an important sign of a commitment of which we as the committee members have directed all the stakeholders to work. They've commended highly the provincial, the South African government, in particular the work of Home Affairs that they have been doing, the city of Cape Town, the Human Rights Commission, and including those that are directly affected on this subject in terms of the cooperation and all the stakeholders that are involved. Now, those of the questions that were responded to all the stakeholders will request that at least you must also do them in writing for purpose of circulation to members. We're highly encouraged by our decision that we've taken a decision of our African brothers and sisters must be reintegrated to our communities. And secondly, if as a result of defiance, must be deported to the place of origin, but within the framework of our law and international protocols. So I agree that the process has been monitored, and all the challenges, obstacles that have been identified, you stakeholders and the committee have managed to resolve them. The financial implication has been raised by all the stakeholders, particularly the National Department of Home Affairs and City of Cape Town, and the issues that are raised by the Treasury around the finances and the Auditor General in relation to the City of Cape Town will encourage, in fact, that will be our resolve that the stakeholders, Home Affairs and the City of Cape Town,
and the provincial government, as has been highlighted as part of the assisting the process. You may need to interface with the, both the Treasury and the Auditor General. But it will be important that also those correspondence must be sent to the committee so that members appreciate the difficulties in relation to the financial implications. But even that on that space, we appreciate that you have pulled all sorts in all angles to make sure that this process of our people in those sites are managed. We really appreciate your commitment. We must at all costs protect the future who are young people, is indicated by all of us. In fact, we've been identified. And what is concerning that is emerging from the Director General's input is that there's an attempt to make the kids, the children there, to be the frontline defense. They use them as defense. And I think we appreciate the movement of the Department of Home Affairs to interface with the social development to protect young kids, African child and women in light with the challenges of that. Because leadership is correct that it has to go with responsibility. And we must all of us ascend to that responsibility, but within the framework of the law in order to protect this. We'll monitor this progress of the social development on how we're going to proceed. We're going to step off and want to thank all members. We'll clearly monitor the outcomes of the meeting that the DG has indicated that's going to convene at 2 o'clock to make sure that complement the finalization of this matter. Mr. Matonzi, we're going to explore the recommendation that has been suggested to interact with the our people who are rigid in that site. Honorable Mcqueen has raised that. We must explore that area because we must understand directly the issues that they are affected, what makes them to be rigid. But we are affirmed in our decision that none of us as citizens and those that are coming from other countries to undermine the rule constitution of the Republic of or any other states, member states. So I think that is our resolve as the committee. We must make sure that our decisions are implemented. The issue of killings, Minister, I don't think that, and we've been emphasizing that point, that this narrative that has been grounded to suggest that the actions that have been conducted, the process is xenophobic, people are killed in reintegration, I mean, in the communities. That is a flawed narrative. And I don't think that is a narrative that we must dismiss and focus on the work that we have to do because it's evident that throughout the African continent, our African brothers and sisters are all over in member state countries, including South Africa, and have been complying with the law. And those that are seeking to comply with the law are in that process, as Mr. McKay has indicated, in terms of the process that they must follow. So we must take emphasis around this distraction to seek to distract and defocus the work that you as stakeholders were engaging on. So thanks very much for the input and responses. We're stepping off this matter, this item. We're releasing the Human Rights Commission, United UNHCR, the City of Cape Town will be continuing with the meeting with the Department of Home Affairs and Government Printing. Thank you very much for your time. You are released.
Thank you, Chairperson, on behalf of the Human Rights Commission. Thank you for being our partner in trying to realize human rights in the country.
On behalf of the UNHCR team, I would also like to thank you for the day meeting and all committee members. And we look forward to continue our collaboration with all stakeholders, in particular the Department of Home Affairs. Thank you.
Minister, we're inviting you to take the two items that we resolved to deal with. Is a brief on the complaints that the members have raised in others, community members. This matter was raised by the co-chair, Honorable Luzel, and other members that the complaints that have been raised and are not being paid to attention. We have received the circulation of a report on those areas, and some of them have been concluded, some are pending. The DG will request you to take a brief around that. Immediately that will invite the minister to take a brief around the issues that he must respond on the government printing works, NEHAO and the PSA. And then we'll then take a decision on how we're going to process the two matters. We have extended our meeting to be until 1. And I want to both the minister and the DG and the DM to be precise on the issues so that there's an item we're going to deal with adoption of the reports. DG?
Thank you so much, Chair and honorable members. So I'll start first. I'm not going to go through each and every list that I have, Chair, except to indicate that Home Affairs had received two sets of queries. The first one was Parliament-wide. It's mainly in green. I think Moses is trying to highlight that one. And the second one is the list that we received from the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, and I think it's titled Parliamentary Old List. And in the main, the queries were related to immigration, and others were related to civics. On the parliamentary list, which is mainly green, Chair, it's safe to indicate that the colleagues have worked quite hard on it. We had received about 195 queries to date. We've been able to finalize 160 of those. There are still 35 that are still pending. Obviously, we need to ensure that we follow due diligence, and we need to verify every step that's required in terms of the verification processes. There are three that are really currently under review, and then there's 35 that's still pending. This is on the one that's green. We've made a lot of progress on that one. And then on the second one, Chair, it's titled Parliamentary Old List. We had received about 32 from the Portfolio Committee. Out of the 32, we have been able to finalize at least 14 of those, and these have been dispatched to VFS between the 9th of April 2021 to the 7th of May 2021. We'll continue to work on this list, Chair. There are four that are currently at the fourth quality assurance with GDJ McKay, who's already working hard, but still has to ensure due diligence. If we don't do that, Chair, it is this committee that will hammer us on not ensuring that there's due diligence. And then there's 10 applications that are at a pending stage at third quality assurance, and then two first quality assurance receiving attention. And then at the bottom of that list, if you can scroll down, Mozi, I then subsequently received queries from Honorable Gwos following a court case against the department for a matter related to CLAC. That matter has been finalized. Honorable Gwos and the client have been informed timeously. And then I also subsequently received, I think the department received queries from Honorable Funder Mierbe. There were three queries. The first one was the surname change, it's an amendment. That case was finalized on the 28th of April, and the client has been duly informed to proceed and apply for a smart ID. The two that are outstanding, Honorable Chair, we hope will be finalized by the 14th of May 2021. We have, to this end, informed Liring, who have indicated that she'll continue
to be our contact person with the portfolio committee and the parliament. So we'll keep members updated as and when we do receive these queries. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, DG, for this brief response. Can I get comments from members on the process since we step off of the matter? And I invite Honorable Ross, Honorable Lokwase, Honorable Mulekwa, Honorable Tito, Honorable Mutise, Honorable Lizel, Honorable Mkwini, and Honorable Pile. Just briefly, because this is going to be a standard DG on the queries that are responded, and we hope that these queries are responded directly also to the community, to the people who are complaining about these issues. Honorable Ross?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you to the DG and to Lorraine. I've seen a bit of an uptick, certainly in the last week, in terms of the inquiries.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Ross. Honorable Lokwase.
Thank you very much, Chair, in the response, and to the DG and the Minister for the response of the queries. I hope we'll work together going forward in such a pattern. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We note the response to the DG and welcome the progress of Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tito.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, my question is that I have also sent some questions, but they did not reflect on the system that on the presentation that AD has sent us. I sent them, I think, to Mr. McKay, and then he forwarded them to Mr. Lering. So I did not see them there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kocha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to really thank the DG. After I sent some of my inquiries to him, they were resolved. So thank you very much for the leadership he has shown in this regard. And also thank you to Lering. And we hope that going forward, our matters will be resolved speedily, as we've now seen that it can be done without delay. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mudise. Honorable Mkwini?
No, thank you, Chair. I was going to say to the department, please sort out my issues. I see there are issues there of the other members that have been sorted out. I've sent a couple, I think about four or five questions with the issue on service delivery in Bisho and other areas. And because we're going to have this meeting, you get contacted. Yeah, one. So, I know that maybe there's some capacitance issue, like, you know, you don't have much capacity and all of that. But I think that there is a person responsible for that task. That person must be able to keep us on the loop every time. Your query is this and all of that. For example, the issue of IT services not working in King or Bisho. You know, you can come back and say, no, the matter has been resolved and all those kind of stuff like that, so that you know that the matter actually has been closed. There's a matter that has been there. But I got contacted yesterday, you know, so, but, you know, interactions and all of that. But it's okay. Maybe it's a beginning. And also on that spreadsheet, please capture all queries. I mean, remember, Tito and I, Uti shared some queries that she actually put in. Let us not wait till we're having this kind of meetings and start preparing, you know, things, because we know it. We can see it. Let it be a consistent thing, you know, a sort of a resolution tracker from them. How far is this thing? And let us be appraised so that we don't have to come and, you know, to this meeting and spend more time. But I'm fine, Ngokeli, but bengicela ukuthi the department, can it capacitate maybe Mrs. Lereng or Mr. Lereng? I don't know, sorry, I'm not sure whether it's he or she. Maybe capacitate many unit that deals with these problems. Because even now, a chairperson, in Pretoria, now there is a protest of the funeral parlor people. They are actually having a problem. They are not getting their death, you know, certificates. So we need to deal with those issues so that we don't have these protests happening everywhere. So thank you very much.
Honorable.
Thank you very much, and I think for me this is a step in the right direction, and it's going to help us to keep track. Also, when there are, you know, delays, we'll be able to address that, and I think it goes well for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, members. I think this, at most, were comments and process, which is a decision of the committee. And I think what we're saying is that it must not only happen when MPs have raised queries. It must happen to all and sundry when they've raised queries with the department, either in provinces. There must be a commitment to respond to those responses, DG, public representative, MPLs, councillors, political, various political parties. So we must take that approach that we may not need to wait for the portfolio committee to either complain on the issues that are raised, but we must bring reports and intervention. And it would be important that when the queries are raised, we can cite members of the committee, but the important people who are raising are those complainants directly interfacing with them. We appreciate this brief report, DG, and I think the right direction in the manner that we must interface. Outstanding issues that are raised by Honorable Tito, we may need to find a way to also deal with them. I don't want the DG to respond to this matter, because we're just laying a framework and approach and how we're going to move, and comments of all members have been accepted. Let's invite the minister to and the acting CEO of GPW. The minister, you're requested to come and give details. There's an indication that you're ready, and we request you to brief us and give members to interface. It's a very important and urgent matter of government printing works, and we think that we'll interface with that one. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we have got this report. I don't know whether the Secretariat can put it on the screen, because it's not a very long report, but it has got annexures. But otherwise, we have sent you copies. I can just present from the copies. As an introduction, Chairperson, I think they are attempting to put it. As an introduction, Chairperson, this is a response to a letter written by organized labor at Government Printing Works, which are constituted by NEHAU and the PSA, the Public Servants Association, at the Government Printing Works. This letter has been sent to the President, the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Home Affairs, the Minister of Public Service and Administration, the Public Service Commission, the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, that's yourselves, the Government Printing Works Risk Committee, the Government Printing Works Audit Committee, and the Public Protector. These structures and entities who receive this letter are being requested to investigate maladministration and elements of corruption against Government Printing Works EXCO members. While lots of things are raised in these letters, to me, at least three of them seems very prominent, and I'll concentrate on these three. Firstly is the issue of leave payments.
Secondly, the issue of personal protective equipment. And thirdly, that there are no uniforms for security officers. So I wish to respond to each one of them. Let me start with this claim of exorbitant amounts of money paid to EXCO members in COVID-19 allowances disguised as leave credits. It is claimed that three EXCO members, that is the acting CEO, the general manager of human resources, and the acting general manager of production and operations, paid themselves exorbitant amounts of money as COVID-19 allowance under the guise of leave credits. Chairperson, in the PSPCP resolution, which was signed on the 29th of June 2020, employees were granted permission not to forfeit their annual accumulated leave days, which could have been taken by the end of June, but ensure that all accumulated leave days of leave are utilized by December 2020. Let me explain what this chairperson means. It's not only for government printing works, it's for the whole government. There was a tendency of government employees, public servants, not to take leave, but to accumulate it in order to get money at retirement, so that they are paid huge amounts of money, thousands and thousands, because they never went on leave. And you are aware, when a person doesn't go on leave, it does not necessarily mean they are productive. So in trying to stop this, the Department of Public Service and Administration made a ruling that if you have accumulated leave days by June of any particular year, you must have taken that leave or you forfeit it. Meaning, if you did not utilize those leave days, it means you don't need your leave and you are not going to get money for it by the end of June. Now, this resolution that was taken was because of COVID, realizing that many people could not have done so. They said they are extending that to the end of December 2020, at which they must take their leave. Now, the Department of Public Service and Administration, circular number 20 of 2020, plus number 3, permission was granted that employees who could not take their leave owing to employers' operational needs and could not reschedule those leaves, their leaves should be paid out. And that is an extra A which I have attached. What I'm trying to explain here, Chairperson, is while the department itself has made a ruling that leave days needs to be taken by the end of June, they then realized that COVID-19 has changed the situation where there might be operational needs of employers within government, not only government printing works. And they said, okay, they are now allowing those who could not take their leave, even if the day has passed, to be paid out for those leave days. So, and it's not true, Chairperson, that members of EXCO, only three members of EXCO paid themselves. It's not true. The reason that they are mentioning these three is because they are specifically targeted. It was actually these three members of EXCO plus three artisans, and these artisans are not mentioned in this letter, who paid themselves this leave, I mean, who were paid this leave days, they never paid themselves, who were paid, and so there were six people. And the payments were not COVID allowances, as is claimed. There were payments in lieu of leave in terms of this circular number 20 of 2020. And after the payment, the acting CEO wrote a report about the payment and send it to the Director General of the Department of Public Works, the Department of Public Service and Administration, as agreed in that circular. And I've attached that report as an extra B, in other ways to show who has how many leave days, who has been paid, what amount has been paid. The government printing works did not just do it. After doing the payments, they send that report to the Department of Public Works, of public service and administration. Now, the three members of EXCO who could not take leave, it was due to operational reasons. Because of the conditions imposed by COVID, they had to be continuously on duty. It was an operational requirement. I don't have to go into the details, but they were required to be on duty. The three artisans were recalled from leave due to their level of expertise when it came to printing essential security documents during the lockdown. You may be aware that government gazettes were printed almost every day in terms of the disaster regulations when everything changes. So they had to be experienced people, and these three artisans were experienced. There were calls from leave, and in terms of this circular, they have to be paid for those leave days. So in conclusion, on this particular chairperson, I really dismiss it with the contempt it deserves. That writing to the president, public protector, minister of finance, two ministers, and all of that, on something where there is written evidence and documentation and information, is unfair to this government structures and unfair even to the president of the country. I think it's an abuse of a democratic process in the country that people are allowed to lodge complaints. The issue of security and other officials have no uniforms. Yes, chairperson, we accept that this one is true and we are worried about it. The reason is because government printing works embarked on a tender process to procure staff for uniforms. The tender was evaluated, but none of the bidders, none of the people who bid it, complied with the requirements. And one of the most important requirements was local content. That means all the uniforms that are produced, there must be local content in order to encourage economic development in the country, rather than just wandering things overseas all the time. And most of the people could not meet the local content. So this has been re-advertised, and the Treasury has given them a transfer. Treasury has given them a permission to use a transversal tender, because Treasury already has got companies who comply to this issue of local content. Now, the last complaint was the lack of PPEs. I want to remind the committee that on Friday, the 7th of May, that is last week, on the APP of Government Printing Works, they demonstrated the 3 million rand that was used for PPEs and explained exactly what the PPP was used, the PPEs were used for. So we also don't accept that there is true that people in Government Printing Works were exposed. They even gave you a report about COVID, how we lost one member who was very sick and what was done for COVID. I think it was clearly explained on the 7th of May to you, Chairperson. The other complaints was just about poor leadership, independent labor unit, and negative media publicity, which is actually done by them. The only one that is worrying us here, Chairperson, is the issue of audits, and they happened because data was lost. To this end, Chairperson, I want to conclude I wish to state, Chairperson and honorable members, that really one is getting very tired by the antics of the unions at DPW, especially the PSA. They employ this type of antics with Nehao almost opposing them. You remember that when the portfolio committee went to do oversight there, Nehao was opposing everything that PSA has said. But in this instance, they seem to have joined hands to come with protests and just write letters. And I believe it's unfair because we are using government resources to investigate some of these things. I am saying so, Chairperson, because I have just written a letter to the Speaker of Parliament, to the Chairperson of this Portfolio Committee, and to the Chief Whip of the Majority Party, whereby the complaint that led the Portfolio Committee to go and do oversight in Government Printing Works, the person who initiated that has written an affidavit under oath, right, signed by the Commissioner of Oath, that he was lying, that he was targeting the acting CEO of Government Printing Works because he was instructed to do so by the PSA. But now he's changing his mind. I've actually attached all the affidavits he has written there. And in those affidavits, it's implicating some of the members of this committee in that action, that they wanted to get rid of the CEO of Government Printing Works. And he said, I must send the copy to the Speaker. I must send the copy to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the Chief to show that that oversight you did there was under a wrong pretext. It was false. He also said, I must send a copy to the Public Service Commission, which was forced to use resources over many months to investigate corruption that did not happen. and this seems to be happening again for the second time. I am hoping the speaker will contact you about that letter, about what the gentleman is saying and who did what. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister, for the brief detailed report on the letter of NEHAU and the PSA. I will request members to interact with the issue. What is highlighted in the issues of government printing works, one, is that we conducted an oversight previously on the issues that we raised. We interfaced with the Public Service Commission. We interfaced with the process of that is carried by the Hawks. And it has emerged in that process, in our oversight, that there was also a loss of application. You remember there was a process of application for the CFO. The applications were stolen, and we directed an investigation to that end. There were corruption alleged to the acting CEO, and including the issue of the trips carried, the strategic workshop. Now there's a, and those processes emerges as if there was an intention to carry the appointment of the CEO or yes, the acting CEO, no, the CEO position there. And I think I must indicate that we've dealt with this matter in detail. But what is becoming clearer now, which are emerging issues that we as the committee must pay attention to detail, is the emerging issues which are negative impacting the government printing works. Members will know that at some point there was a collapse of systems at the government printing works. You know that there's a matter that was raised in this meeting by Honorable Ross of the loss of data, which has contributed to the issues of the financial status. There's also a process that CIRA has taken around an official who deals with security there. And there's a NEHAU new allegations which are coming here and the PSA. And there's a letter and confessions around this process. So I just want to highlight these key areas so that we are able to comprehend our decision on how we need to move forward, members. It will be quite important that we may need to spend time on the recommendation and so that we get to the bottom of this matter. I've noted that the letter is referred to many stakeholders, but we as Parliament were to focus on what is dealt with, we must deal with other activities that will be carried by the public protector or letter sent to the Minister Mboweni or President Ramaphosa. It's another process that they must be engaged on, but we have a responsibility to conduct oversight, and Minister must account to all the issues as they started, but we must carry our responsibility. Minister, don't give up. Don't get tired, because by implication, if you get tired, it means your leadership has been tested to be weak. So a leader doesn't pronounce that statement. You must work so that we as committee
must hold you to account to the issues you have presided, the institution you are presiding over. You rely on the committee to complement the work, and we've noted all the issues. So I'm trying to give a background on the details of the issues and how we're going to resolve on them. I'm going to invite the Honorable Khwase, Honorable Mutise, Honorable Tito, Honorable Ross, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Mpini, Honorable Blizel, Honorable Pillay. And after that, we'll request the department and the acting CEO to respond to some of the issues that are being raised, and the deputy minister and the director general.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me start by agreeing with you that we need to go on an oversight to interact with all stakeholders of GPW. Because where I'm sitting, GPW is now becoming a project that needs to be, that we need to babysit every now and then. But I'm glad that already the minister has already given out the process on how far they are with securing the uniform for security officers. But Chair, one would like to know the relationship between the management and the labor unions. It's not the first time that we receive administrative matters raised with the committee. There are platforms put in place by the leadership of GPW to address labor-related matters. Maybe we must just get a sense if there's any relationship between the labor unions and the management of GPW. One other issue is that is the allegation by the unions that the GPW is in a bad financial state. Can maybe the minister and the acting CEO give us a response or their response to this allegation? The other issue or the other question, Chair, is what measures have the department or what measures have the acting CEO and the minister put in place to prevent fruitful and wasteful expenditure referred to by the unions? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mudise. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation by the Minister of Home Affairs. Chair, it is true that we went there last year for oversight, and then it's unfortunate that the union that was complaining about the CEO, it was the BSA. Now, how is on board, is also complaining about corruption and all of those things. We were there, and the very same people, union of Nehau, they were supporting the acting CEO on our day of the oversight. So I also concur with Honorable Lekwase that we must go there for another oversight, and then the acting CEO must also tell us if maybe there are measures there at government printing works where people from the administration side can maybe go and and put in their complaints instead of them sending letters straight to Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tito. Honorable Ruas.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And you know, I must say, when we first went on our oversight to Government Printing Works, I was very excited. I mean, it's a entity with massive potential. And I think, you know, we have to say that there's a number of areas of smoke around that organization. And we've got to be very careful not to say that just because an organization complained more than once or on different things, that those are then related to the same gripe. You know, I think it's very important for us to look at each of the different types of complaints as a separate thing. So I certainly agree on an oversight in general. I think the last one was very specific. And I thank the minister for investigating the latest allegations. You know, the leave payouts, I think it's a problem even for Home Affairs, that those payouts often way exceed the budgetary amount that's allocated for them. But that's another story. You know, I can understand that rationale. But I think, you know, what we are talking about here, certain issues of uniforms and PPE. The other allegations are allegations of mismanagement, corruption, etc. And, you know, one person may have withdrawn their statement, but there were many other allegations. That is not the person that brought the allegations to the committee. The Democratic Alliance took the step of saying, let's get it investigated by the police. That's what we really asked from this committee in the beginning. And we are awaiting the outcome of that process here. I'm a little bit concerned to hear that somebody that was so adamant and that claimed that there was a recording from Vodacom to confirm the allegations suddenly changed their mind. You know, especially where some of the allegations are in terms of bullying, where staff were bullied and victimized. You know, I don't want to have conjecture where you say, well, if that kind of allegation is coming out, is it possible that this person was bullied and victimized and that's why they withdrew their complaint? And, you know, the question still remains. There was a Vodacom recording of that. It was available. The people that were investigating that never actually went and listened to that recording. It's very interesting to hear why. So Chairperson, you know, to the Democratic Alliance's point of view, in terms of the various allegations against the CEO, those are being investigated by the police, and that continues. I understand that the minister also asked the Hawks to investigate the undue influence on the appointment of the acting CEO. So we also await the outcome of that. I'm not sure where we are in the process of that. But so Chairperson, I would support an oversight. I'm very concerned, you know, we're very concerned about the, we're coming up for 3 years in a row now of not having financials on time. And it's extremely concerning when you say you're losing data. So we absolutely have to have a session also with the audit findings of the Auditor General in terms of what's going on and look at this whole 3 year cycle. Because at the end of the day, you know, we say that an entity gets a negative audit report. And we are also responsible for that. We are actually one of the stakeholders in those audits to say that we need to put in place measures. We need to ensure, you know, we heard at the beginning of last year that measures were being put in place to sort out the audit problems. But again, it's the third year in a row that we're not going to have these reports. So what I'd ask though is if we do have an oversight, that we don't just have it with the senior management, that we don't just sit in a room with the CEO and some people that are told to be there while the rest of the people are not there, and that we potentially have some separate meetings with different stakeholders to get a broader view of what is going on there. So Chairperson, that is my first recommendation, concurring with the oversight visit. And then the second one is that we have a specific meeting around the audit challenges that are going on over the midterm period, not just looking at a single financial statement, to find out what is going on across that time period. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the brief report by Honorable Minister on the allegation against the government pretty works. And I want to agree with you, Chairperson, that we have dealt with government printing work issues previously when there was allegations alleged against the management of the government printing works. Now, Chairperson, there are new allegations that have been emerged from the union to the management of government printing works. Chairperson, I think this animosity has been going on for some time. And I think as a PC, we need to attend to it as a matter of urgency in order to put the matter to finality. I want to agree with Honorable Lefase that as a Portfolio Committee, we need to conduct an oversight for us to go deeper into the issues so that we put this matter to finality, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Mkwene. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, through you, you know, the minister and the department will always think that, Tukuti, you know, we are caucusing and all of that, and we're always against them in terms of when they come to the committee. But to tell you the truth is that we're always looking at the issues, and we look at the issues with superior logic, and we evaluate them. And then that's what we actually do in this committee. I agree, I mean, with my colleague who member Lekhwase, and that we indeed, we should be going there and investigate and make sure that what is happening there. And we must not meet certain groups of elites. We need to go deeper and check what is happening. And I think that my colleague also asked a very critical question. The critical question was to saying that when did the management meet with the union? When was it? How far ago? Have they been often, or when was it really? A leader, a chairperson, is a person with integrity, with clear goals, with a vision, clear communication, and inspire and motivate, encourage or recognize talent, stimulate the work. Now, if Tina as a portfolio committee, we're going to be getting administrative issues, as my colleague said, indeed, there is something going on there. The leadership needs to be provided. And you correctly put when you're saying that the minister must not give up and throw hands in the air. If there's something going on there, you need to go to the people and engage. It means that there's an engagement that is not happening there, clear and openly. So that, you know, you can say that, look, I've tried to engage. It's not a matter of issuing circulars, issuing emails. He said, union bosses and the affected members, come, let's talk. What are the issues? And then you deal with those issues. And you need to meet with those union members timelessly. You can put in as a date. I'm actually reliably told that the last time the management has met with the union, it was in 2019 November, when the new acting, the CEO came, which is, what does it mean to us? So I'm just saying that, Uri, there is a borderline between a manager and a leader. A leader inspires and motivates, needs to look at the issues and not fight. I've got a couple of questions here that I wanted to ask, Chair. I think that maybe those questions, I'll reserve them in terms of when we get, you know, into that oversight. I've got 13 of them, so I don't want to waste your time since we've taken this thing here. And then also, I'm worried about the data that has gone missing. It's extremely, extremely serious matter. And the minister is not highlighting that. And here we are getting leaks that saying that there's an audit report that has found, that has got adverse findings. Or it's a, I think the disclaimer, there's liberal as a, you know, the categorization, but it's bad. And it's not being signed by the acting CEO and the minister. We're saying that, guys, when I left here in the previous meeting, I said, can you just be honest with us? Because you want to help. We don't want to fight and all of that. Let us check what is happening. How can we assist? So we need to be open in terms of the issues. And currently here, there are issues that the minister has not been said, which are very critical. Number one, the issue of the staff. There's a cleaners, 30 cleaners who were, I think they went to the CCMA. There was a problem with the staff cleaners, 30 of them. And then there was a ruling that I think they must be given some compensation. Maybe the minister or the CEO might be able to, you know, to clarify on that. And then after that, now the GPW is appealing on those issues. And said, but guys, why are you coming to us honestly with issues and say this is what is actually what is actually happening there in the proper? And then we're saying that there's a guy who was a whistleblower, I think it was Siraj. Now Siraj has tend to be a GPW a witness now, said no, I was coerced and all of that. That guy must be charged. That guy must go to jail because he lied under oath here. He made the whole community to go and do oversight. And then When now he's happy, he's in some space, he comes back here and saying that, no, I made a mistake. That guy must be charged. He must go to jail, actually, wherever he goes. We must write there, well, this guy is dishonest. You cannot do that. Now, he's causing chaos now. So we're not going to listen to actually that. You know, we want to sort out the issues of GPW. We support you, the entity. We want it to actually, flourish. But let us get proper information. You know, if you launch a branch, that's my last thing, is to short the leadership. When you launch a branch and you want some delegates and you have an interest, you'll never launch a branch. There'll be chaos. People will be fighting. But if you launch a branch where you find that you don't have an interest, but you want everyone to demand, there must be a solution. Then the branch will actually launch. I think that here in this GPW is that we've got people who are sorting out issues, but they have interest. So we need to be open to it. And I suggest that I agree with my colleague. Let us go there and investigate all these allegations one by one, the loss of data. Now they're saying that, well, since now we are saying that this issue of this the payment of the leave, Chairperson, is being on the spotlight now. Apparently, there are other people out of those people, the 600 employees, which are being asked now to be paid. Okay. So we need to get into the bottom of that leadership. And then also there's a petition by the employees, all of them. If there's a petition, Chairperson, there must be an issue. I support the move, but let us go there. Thank you very much.
Okay. I was laughing on one matter of the branches.
Because we at the same time.
Thank you. Honorable Zell?
Thank you, person. I think I've been covered by all my colleagues. I would also support a move for us to go and do our own oversight, our own investigation. Let's speak to the unions, let's speak to staff, let's speak to management, let's speak to internal audit. There's clearly something amiss at this organization. I don't think I've ever served a portfolio committee where one entity has been in the spotlight so much. And I also don't think that we can really, it's quite tragic that there's this constant, allegations and counter allegations. And then, we really have to go and make up our own minds as to what's going on there. It's not that we cannot trust the minister's version, but for example, just reading this one letter that came to us yesterday, where it says that Mr. Rizvi, who made these allegations against Ms. Fossey, made a mistake, or now it's been withdrawn, and, he was suffering from COVID and therefore didn't think he was going to make it. It's like a soapy this, And then for example, saying that he was acting on the agenda of third parties. Well, who are these third parties that want to really go to this extent to damage the credibility of Ms. Fossey? So it's, we are dealing with this with a spoopy here that we're watching unfolding. So let's go into the oversight. I think it's unfortunate, as Honourable Ruth said, this is an entity that's got so much potential. Really, it keeps on being in the news for the wrong reasons. So clearly, it's either that there's a problem with leadership, there's a problem with management at the organisation, and there's a problem with the culture that prevails at this entity. So let's go and do oversight, Chairperson. I fully support and agree with my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Pile.
Chair, firstly, let me concur with the rest of my colleagues and support the oversight visit. In saying so, Chair, I think, there's two things I draw from this whole of what is happening here in the discussions. One is that, if somebody has a preferred candidate, then they would go at every length to destabilize an organization or institution. And I think, judging from all that we've been hearing over the past few weeks and also in the reports, it seems like there are certain individuals that prefer other people over this. And we can't be drawn into this because it's affecting the operation of government printing works. And I think it's important that we must be able to find ourselves there. But Chair, in saying so about the oversight visit, I think we also need to be clear about what we intend to achieve. So while we might just be able to go and do an oversight, before we go, we need to decide what is it that we want to look for. Two, what is it that we want to achieve from this? And three,
if our visit and oversight visit is going to be able to bring finality on the challenges that we are facing. And lastly, you know, it's very important to note that when someone says something and then wants to withdraw, I have a little bit of difficulty, because then it means that they wanted to say it and they've already said it, and whether they withdraw or not, it has already been said, so everybody's heard it. And it creates aspersions and doubts in anyone's mind. So that is a little bit concerning, of whether someone says something and then withdraws it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can I check if Honorable Mutisa is back?
Yes, Chairperson. Thanks so much. I think I'm also sufficiently covered by the colleagues, but more by Honorable Pillay, to say let us not also go then conduct an oversight and not know what we really look for. In the past, we've dealt with such allegations, and what is worrying is that it is always allegations that are unfounded. There is no proof, and I'm sure even the members who are stating such allegations, they know that there are relevant authorities where they can go and report these allegations and be able to prove them, so that at least there's substance into them. But I also want to support the fact that let's go then conduct an oversight. Let us observe the system, the HDPW. As colleagues have said, it seems as if there's something amiss that is taking place there. But also let's take this opportunity and appreciate the minister for always coming forth in trying to clarify these issues, and because we know that you are forever looking at making sure that these departments are functioning properly and effectively. But I also want to support the oversight, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues, members, for the interaction with this on this matter. I will invite for comments from Acting CEO, Deputy, the Director General, Deputy Minister, and the Minister. Then we work towards proposing a way forward on the issues that have been raised. Acting CEO.
Let me thank you, Chairperson, and welcome the opportunity to respond. Greetings to Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, and colleagues. I'm going to respond to some of the questions. However, I'm flanked by members of EXCO who will actually add in the event that I don't cover most of the things that have been asked, Chairperson. Let me start by saying that, Chairperson, when you are the head of the family and you actually learn that your own children have gone to the neighbor's house to complain about your internal household matters, it should worry you, of course, because it obviously calls for an introspection to establish where things have actually gone wrong. And I think we are here as DPW management and would like to upfront recognize the fact that the letters being sent around in the public eye reflect that there are internal challenges that needs to be addressed or attended to indeed. But I need to indicate as well that management remains committed to creating a conducive environment for labor employer engagement in order to create that labor peace that we all aspire to have, thereby contributing to the overall governance. I also need to upfront state that there's no crisis in GPW that is insurmountable. Internal matters needed to be addressed internally first, so that before we go out in the public eye, we have satisfied ourselves that we've exhausted matters internally, and it's now an opportunity to go outside because we couldn't actually agree on certain things. But honorable members, let me perhaps put a context to some of the challenges in GPW, so that we can have a clearer view of what we're up against, especially in view of the impending portfolio committee visit, the oversight, which I need to also upfront say I would really welcome. I would really welcome that oversight, and we have received one oversight visit before. We were promised that there will be a follow-up oversight visit, and we would like to welcome that. But before that happens, perhaps let's put a context. GPW has a very long-standing culture of co-management between labor and management, which has actually been sustained to a point where it created a bad character in the organization. And it would take a bit of time to actually deal with that and correct it. But it is important that we recognize that and upfront as management indicate that there are measures in place to make sure that we deal with such a culture. Everything plays itself out in that culture, but we need to clearly indicate in this platform that there are measures in place to deal with it. And also an acknowledgement from management is that there is a strained relationship between management and the union. However, it is important to also raise in this platform that management has already extended a hand to labor unions to make sure that we deal with the matters internally. I need to clearly state that unions have instead decided to adopt a populist approach of taking things out to the media or to the public entities or all the entities that they've sent to without actually having exhausted the internal challenges. In GPW, unions have been running the show for a while now. And I need to be specific in this regard and not sound vague. Amongst others, it includes trying to actually influence decisions on who gets appointed in GPW based on, amongst others, either union affiliation or personal interests. The skirmishes within GPW are basically power games, you know, by unions at the expense of innocent employees. And at times they are done to actually distract management or divert attention to other matters when they are actually real issues that need to be attended to internally. The unions in GPW have had actually a culture of just organizing strikes, you know, illegal strikes for that matter, without even following procedures. And this has been happening within GPW. You have a bunch of employees that actually stir trouble. And they actually use employees to further their own personal battles. And I think these are some of the methods that shall be ventilated during the oversight visit. In a strategic plan that we held in October 2019, management took a very firm decision to take control of GPW and make sure that we don't co-manage with the unions. This is a stance that has actually rocked the boat for unions and enhanced the levels of dissatisfaction that are there within the organization. There's also been a very bad culture and trend of misinformation and discrediting GPW management in the public eye, and then to also taint the image of the organization in the public platform. And obviously this goes against working in the greater interest of the organization. Indeed, there were allegations before of corruption against myself as well as other ex-co members. Of having influenced supply chain management processes and so forth. We are not coming to explain ourselves here for the first time, honorable members. The previous communique, which was also sent to members of the committee in 2020, allegedly by some anonymous person, carried wild and false allegations which could not be substantiated. In fact, there was no substance found in those allegations, and some of these were confirmed by the Public Service Commission report. Another issue which needs to be noticed is that when unions send a letter to us, or actually to the minister, not to us, before a proper response could be provided, then this whole information goes into the public eye with wild accusations without actually any substance. Perhaps I should break a few things down to management so that you understand where we're coming from. And in this, I will be responding to some of the questions that have been made. Each time there is an attempt in GPW to appoint a substantive CEO, this disruptive tendencies, okay. And I'll give you a bit of a background. In 2017-18, when the attempt was made by the then Minister of Home Affairs to fill the post of the CEO, the PSA in particular took to the Labour Court to set aside the appointment of the CEO. And since you can't put a time frame to labor to matters that have been lodged with the Labour Court, you know, obviously that delayed the appointment of the CEO of GPW. Further, in 2020, when another attempt was made by the Minister of Home Affairs to fill the post, a letter from the so-called anonymous was placed in the media platforms, carrying again wild accusations which could not be substantiated, but that obviously sparked an investigation that delayed the appointment process. And indeed, I would like to concur with honorable members who say sometimes you are bound to believe that there is a preference of a particular person that should come and lead GPW, and in the event that there are indications of anything to the contrary, then there's all the skirmishes begin. In 2021, again, when an attempt is made again to fill a post of the CEO of GPW, you get another letter again being circulated to entities, again containing wild accusations in order to gain public attention, portraying a negative image of GPW as if we are in a state of a perpetual crisis. You actually read between the lines of saying, where is the maturity to handle these matters internally when there are platforms that have been put in place to handle this? So labor unions are really working against the greater good of the organization in that instead of attending to these matters internally, then they are splashed in the public and it doesn't actually make them right. And I would like to also respond to the issue that was raised by the chairperson to say challenges such as this in GPW are not new. You know, each time we want to make some progress, there is something that comes to disrupt us. When we were about to fill the post of CFO as well as GM operations, the CVs got stolen. And I'm not talking about one small file. And I normally make this example to say, if you walk into a person's house and you want to steal paper to make fire, you just take anything that is in front of you because you just want to go and make fire. But when you walk into the office with files and you know that you have to take a particular color, the pink one and the black one, and you have to leave the green ones and the orange ones, you obviously know exactly what you're looking for. And again, that act led to CVs being stolen, led to the delay in the filling of the post of the CFO as well as the GM operations. The Hawks are busy investigating and obviously we're waiting for the report. In this year again, when the audit was about to start, suddenly the systems went down. And when the systems went down, we were reliably informed that the data, which is the financial data, as well as those on e-gazettes, was specifically the one that was adversely affected. And obviously that has an adverse effect on the audit because you can't start the audit without the financial data. Data has been lost. We've engaged with AG. We've had a debriefing session with them. We've mentioned to them that GPW cannot be audited because data has been lost. Clearly something is remiss, indeed, because data just decided to disappear. So these are some of the issues that as a management collective, we would like to bring to the attention of the committee because some of them seemed very much to have happened by design. It's not by accident. So it's important that we put this context in place before we take the question so that it is clear that there are challenges and they need to be addressed. Perhaps I need to invite some of the ExCo members to come and also ventilate on some of the issues. We have put Chairperson on and honorable members and Minister and Deputy Ministers measures in place to try and engage labor. And GMHR will actually ventilate on those issues. Whether we are in a bad financial state or not, the CFO, acting CFO will obviously come through. And address that issue. But communication in GPW with the unions has been beefed up. We have sent a communique in writing to unions to indicate to them that the platform is available for them to engage internally through bilaterals with GMHR. And I need to indicate that sometimes when you try to reach out and this initiative is thrown back at your face, then you stand to wonder what the objective is. The first bilateral meeting that was scheduled for the 23rd of April to engage unions, they decided to stay away from it and they did not attend. And unions, chairperson and members have been engaged through GMHR on various platforms, as well as at the departmental bargaining chamber that has been happening in city. But the tendency of having to go public is something that needs to be looked into, because it's not for lack of trying by management to engage them internally before these issues escalate. We even further indicated that we will, by invitation, and I need to clarify this, by invitation, ask them to come and sit with us at EXCO so that the matters can be ventilated at that level and they can raise the challenges that they have so that we can then address them. But obviously, they're not going to be serving at each and every EXCO member, because that would be co-management. So we will invite them. We will continue to invite them so that they can come and raise their issues, and then we can address them. We even said they can have a one-on-one with the CEO. Whoever becomes the substantive CEO or the acting CEO, they are willing, they are more than given the permission to come and sit and actually engage on the issue. So when platforms like such as those are made, and you find them going around, using state entities or abusing state entities to get attention on these matters, one wonders why. And indeed, these are matters that needs to be looked into quite sharply internally. We need to recognize the fact that unions have the right to raise their issues or their concerns. But this must be done responsibly, because leadership comes with responsibility and accountability. We have a recognition agreement with both labor unions. And that must be implemented as agreed to and signed by both parties. So if they go outside of that platform and then do anything that is to the contrary, it is actually quite worrying. Chairperson and honorable members, we have policies in the department, and labor unions alike, management and employees, must subject themselves to policies of the organization. Illegal strikes are frowned at. Ill discipline or misconduct is also frowned at. It cannot be tolerated within an entity of a state where people choose to decide to do as they please. So we must make sure that those are exhausted, those platforms are exhausted, and members make sure that we adhere to the rule of law in raising our dissatisfaction without actually causing discomfort to those who are willing to actually obey the laws. We have actually come here to address those issues. And maybe CFO, let me hand to you to address the issue of the financial state, and then GMHR, perhaps you will talk to the issues of the labor-related matters. Chairperson, thanks through you.
I'm sure you're careful that in the responses, the people you're mentioning were not recognized.
My apologies, Chairperson.
And there's a reason to that effect, which will clarify it when we're working on the summary. I think your response on the issues is noted. Deputy Director General?
No, thank you, Chair. Nothing from my side for now. Thank you.
Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think the acting CEO has really went deep to some of these matters, but just a few points. One, we are not in any way, and will never be, and we don't have power. All that we do is that we support oversight that is carried over by the portfolio committee, just like we had alluded to last time, that the portfolio committee can come and do oversight in GPW. Again, it is not a problem. We'll support it, provide the necessary information. But I must indicate that there are big elements of sabotage, and the element of sabotaging how government printing works is operating. The issue of loss of information, as well as the system crashing, does not seem to have been a natural issue. It seems to have been a human created problem that is meant to escalate problems for the entity, and as such, sabotaging the whole operations of the country, not just of GPW alone. The other issue, I do believe that we need to start taking action, and there must be consequences against those who provide misleading information, who send us on a goose chase for no apparent reason. There has to be consequences. You can't have people coming up claiming certain things and then later withdraw and doing side to side. We will be taking action against those who are misleading and wasting the time of the committee. And on the issue of finances, I think that the finances of GPW were presented in the last portfolio committee meeting as part of our annual as part of our APPs. And we did go into town in terms of explaining the financial situation. And the financial situation stands as it is. The organization has reserved, yes, it has been able to even buffer the impact that came to it as a result of COVID-19. That is where I would like to pause, Chair. Thank you very much. But we do welcome the oversight.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister?
Chairperson, once more, thank you. Let me explain, Chairperson. You spoke to me in very strong terms. That leaders, I must not use the word I'm tired. Leaders don't tire. Chairperson, I said that deliberately. It's a figure of speech. I did not mean literally that I am not going to deal with issues because I'm tired. It's a figure of speech explaining the my feelings about what's happening there. And I've got all the right to express my feelings in that way. I think the person who came nearer to the root of this problem is Honorable Moleko. She used the word animosity. There seems to be animosity between management and some unions at the government printing works. I can confirm to you, yes, there is animosity between PSA and the acting CEO. And I'm not going to give you the root cause of that animosity, because I would like you to go and discover it on your own. The only thing I must say, you mentioned something, Chairperson, about a CIRA and security officer. The security officer you are talking about is the chairperson of PSA at Government Printing Works. His job position is a security officer. He has been removed by the acting CEO, and that fueled the animosity. The acting CEO did not remove him out of her own accord. CIRA, the Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority, came to GPW to do their evaluation. They always do that, they do their investigation. And they concluded that the head of security does not qualify for that job because he has not registered for a particular period. I'm not sure whether they said 10 or 15 years. Did not register with the private security industry agency, and they said it's against the act. In fact, the letter they wrote, even to me, was specifically that they will charge the acting CEO if he doesn't remove this particular individual. So he was removed to another area, and he doesn't like that. And so he's fighting immensely the acting CEO in that regard. Secondly, Chairperson, I agree with the acting CEO about this influence, because it happened to me. When we advertised the job of acting CEO, the unions demand from me that don't do an appointment until you meet us. I've been in government, Chairperson, for 27 years now, since the beginning of democracy. At no stage have I ever appointed the DG or a CEO in conjunction with unions or after consulting unions, because that's very dangerous. Nobody does that. No employer does that. Government doesn't work like that. And so when you refuse, then this type of letters go out. Do we meet the unions? I just forgot the date. It's a few weeks that I've met with PSA. Some of these complaints, they are repeating on these letters. I've responded to them. For instance, they came with this claim that the finances of GPW are down, they are afraid that they are not going to get their salaries. That's what they said. They said, no, the morale is down because they may not get the salaries because the finances are down. I reassured them, Chairperson, that it's not true. Now, when GPW was reporting last week in their APP, they showed you the finances. Even you, as members here, were very happy that you even said it's important to know that government entities like SOEs can actually have reserves like the government printing works. I told them that in a meeting long ago, and very clearly at that time, it was even led by a senior manager of PSA from the national level. And I proved to him that, no, tell workers this is not true. The financial status is still okay. There's no way they won't get their salary. Now, a few weeks later, you see it's still in the letter being written here as a complaint. Now, Chairperson, the accusation from Honorable Mcqueenie that I did not highlight certain things, including the issue of loss of data, I must inform you, I take it very, very seriously. That issue of loss of data, as the DM is saying, is not a small thing. It's not, as they were trying, it's not a sabotage against the acting CEO. It sabotaged the whole state, not only even the government printing works or Department of Home Affairs. It sabotaged the whole state, and I'm going to give you the facts. Such that I even went to the president to report this matter to him, and I've asked him, and last week I wrote a letter. I asked him to set up a tribunal to investigate this because we can't let the state be sabotaged. So the issue of financial data, of getting adverse audit and all that were planned, the presidential tribunal must get into it. And why did I go to the president? Because in some of the letters, some of the affidavits written there, especially by this gentleman who you said must be charged, some members of parliament are implicated. So this is a very big issue that they were implicated, they were part of this. And I'm jittery that you are going to do oversight there as members of parliament when some of you in the portfolio committee are being implicated in this statement, which I've given to the speaker. So that issue must be resolved before you go and do oversight, which I really much welcome. As to whether a person who was a whistleblower before, or a purported whistleblower, come out and confess that he was lying. That happens a lot in the state. That's why we have got state witnesses. As to whether state witnesses must be believed or not, it must be on the basis of what they present, not on the basis that, no, we already don't trust them. So this letter which was written, which I sent to the speaker, there are even recordings. It was even signed by the commissioner of oath. I think it will do the committee very well not just to dismiss it, to come in from a guy who's beat or not. State witnesses are there all the time, and this person has come back as a witness. He has given reasons why he did what he did. Whether he must be arrested or not, that is a matter that police must decide. In other words, decide whether you charge a state witness or not. On the issue of a petition, honorable members, honorable chairperson, I am made to understand, and you'll go and investigate that when you go, that what you call a petition attached to this letter was actually an attendant register. Because I was made to understand some of the people who signed, put their signatures, they were not aware that letters are going to be written. They attended a meeting where they were asked to sign as an attendant register, then it's put there as evidence that there's a petition. Now, Honorable Mudise spoke of unfounded allegations. It's not that the committee doesn't know about them. When you know, when there, one of the allegations was that the acting CEO is not qualified for a job, and we were able to ascertain because she has got certificates to show what she's qualified for. She has got degrees, which I don't even want to mention here, meaning that she, it's not true that she didn't qualify for the job. The second allegation was that she does not have a requisite experience in the public service. She was able to prove to you that she has got 26 years experience in the public service, 15 of which is senior management level. That also you pushed aside. An allegation that she flew to Paris for a security printing conference with friends using first class. I told you I'm the one who actually approved that trip, and we gave you tickets that there were three members who flew. The CFO has got tickets, has got the names of those people, but it still comes as an allegation, and it's repeated again and again and again. That's why I'm using words like I'm tired. You are aware that in some of the letters that were written to this committee, I was also implicated that I've got business deals with the acting CEO. When I went to Namibia and called the minister to come here, that we want to do business with Namibia, they called that a business deal with the CFO. When I asked the CFO to talk to Namibians, And she reported to you here last week how she's getting into SADC countries to look for business. When that happened, starting with Namibia, me going there to acquire that business, bringing the minister here, it's written in a letter of a so-called whistleblower that the minister is involved. So that's why I'm using words like I'm tired of this type of thing. And Chairperson, go and do an oversight. But the presidential team, I wanted to get to the bottom of this. I've got a meeting with the Minister of State Security because I also want state security to move deeper into it. I've had a meeting with the head of the Hawks because there are certain things I can't explain to you now on this platform, on some of these individuals who are writing these letters, which the Hawks are busy with. And I'm eagerly waiting for such reports. So in short, Chairperson, it's not a secret that there is animosity. One of the letters which were written to me was when we advertised this post of CEO. That letter said, if you appoint the acting CEO, we will release these complaints to the public. And indeed, they were released. In other words, it was a blackmail. Please don't appoint so-and-so if you do. And I don't want to be blackmailed. Least so by workers who are working in an entity that they can control me. So the chairperson of PSA in the government printing works there must come and answer some of these issues that he's doing there, because I have spoken to them. I have warned him about this. You may remember, Chairperson, Honorable Veteran Nubota was very angry when you did that oversight. And I asked him why he's angry. He said, no, I know this gentleman from the Free State. Wherever he is, there is trouble. There's never been peace wherever he is. Now, today, they've been successful in casting aspersions on what is happening. And that's their aim, to cast aspersions on members of this committee so that you no longer trust what is happening in GPW. I can see some members don't even trust the report we gave, despite the fact that there are figures and numbers and documents. Figures don't lie, Chairperson. When you say GPW is in a good state and you were shown the amount in the bank and all that, that can't be a lie. All you have to do as committee members is to go to the bank to make sure that you check whether this money is there or not, rather than believing the conspiracy theories which are happening there all the time. So, Chairperson, okay. I want to defend government printing works. It's a state entity which we can't do without, but I'm not going to allow people to destroy it. Definitely, that I'll never allow. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for the responses. The reason, acting CEO, I did not want to invite your executive is because you have presented an APP last week, and there's clarity on details around that. And secondly, we'll interface with them on the allegations raised when the oversight is going to be conducted. So we're giving them enough time because we have got a sufficient report from you, the DM, and the minister. Now, this gives us a one stage to understand the issues. So your executive must note that it was deliberate not to allow them to speak. The second point, Minister, and I want to caution, the portfolio committee is not implicated in anything. Members. And the narrative that is emerging, because I want a point where we don't just generalize and allege members of the committee that they are in that space. And the first point that we must correct, because you don't want the public to read the intervention of the portfolio committee as part of the problem
even when they're going to interview. The letter you've written to the speaker and the chairperson, Comrade Bongo, outlines specifics in terms of the areas of concern in relation to what becomes an outlook of participation in the committee. So I want to outrightly dismiss that point because it may emerge you are presiding over our problem. And we're going to reach that stage when the speaker is going to interface with the letter that we're not implicated in anything ourselves. We don't know about that. It's arising from the minister, and we're dismissing it, that the committee is not implicated in that space. You must say
to step aside.
The chairperson, the acting chair, part of the problems which are arising there, your name as the Honorable Musa Chaban, Honorable Mqin, you are implicated. Oh, no, you're not implicated. You are alleged on that process. So to generalize, it's not a framework of interfacing with the issue because we are reporting to the public when we host the, we're conversing with the public when we interface with the committee and reporting. That's the first point that we must say, appreciate. What is going to happen is that we request the committee secretary to request both the unions to submit substantive evidence to the committee so that when we go to oversight, we are privy to the details which they are referring to. We're not going to deal with verbal interviews or something like that there. They must submit, if they're saying that there's overpayment on this and wara-wara, this allegation on this and so forth and so on, they must submit to that, to the secretary, Mr. Matonzi, must write a letter response to the, both the union, give substantive evidence to the issues that, that they're raising because we want to go to the oversight with details and confirm certain issues which will be doing that in that oversight. We'll meet with the management, we'll meet with the NEHAO and the PSA, and I can recall clearly that in the previous oversight, both NEHAO and PSA, on the same issue they're raising, they were different. In fact, they were opposing each other clearly. But because on the work that we're doing as a committee of oversight, we're going to conduct oversight interface on the basis of the evidence they've submitted, they must substantiate what they've returned to the chair of the committee, Honorable Bongo, and the and any other stakeholder that is dealing with. The committee is not, by the way, I must emphasize, Honorable Members, our oversight conduct is not a by the way. No. It must not be interpreted as that. We are going to do oversight in line with our legislative work and the conduct of the oversight. The president, as the minister is raising, the functions that are going to be assigned to people are going to do that. They are going to do it within the prescribed law. It's not even the by the way from there. So I'm trying to do an emphasis that all the stakeholders that are involved go and interface with that matter. The other must not be seen as a by the way as it arises. We are going to focus on the work, get the details on the issues of the government printing works. We are going also to make a practical observation on the systems there in the government printing works. You know, in the previous oversight, we're taken to the operation. We explained this doing what this what's happening and so forth. So we must get into the details of why this what you call the data which the Honorable Rewards and the Minister have raised. And it is correct that in the last meeting, which the matter was raised, the minister you have did take account to make sure that this matter is going to be investigated and will get a report backwards. To the committee. So the framework of members is that we'll request the secretary to process as the recommendation of the oversight. We're going to interface with all the issues, including the affidavit, the person who has now turned to report. This call state witness. I'm not sure whether in a relative manner how is happened now. He's within that, but we must pay attention to that, because when you do wrong thing, and at a particular point you recognize that you have committed the wrong thing, you must not be blamed, but we must pay attention to that. But action must be taken to both the player and those that committed to do wrong. Because when you're an executive and you've been doing wrong things, you must know that I'm responsible, I must account. I'm undermining the policies of the government printing works, so I must be taken and to task. We must commend, in fact, that progress in terms of those that are going to repent. We are going to, as the last point, going to get in that oversight, acting CEO will request a detailed report on the issues of the previous oversight. What happened on the decision we've communicated with the committee, with the executive yourself, and the minister. And I know that in part of the report that has been indicating some of the issues have been reported. So we're going to the oversight with a clear framework, focus, and the committee will then able to take a decision, a report as to what we're going to do. Minister, we've said to you, in fact, that government printing works has been, and I think you have raised this matter, from over time, the acting CEO and the acting CFO and the acting GM operation, because those are some of the key functions that must stabilize the work of government printing works. Honorable Ross raised a point that we must guard this institution. Home Affairs precise on two votes, IEC and government printing works. As members of parliament, we must be able to conduct our oversight, make sure that they function in terms of what they have designed to be to. So I want to thank all the members on this item of government printing works. Thank the minister and the report that has been presented, which give confidence on the interaction with the problems that are facing there. But as we say, that the oversight will give us a more details on how we're going to move forward. Thanks, Minister. Thanks, DM. Thanks, CEO and your team, acting CEO and your team, the DG on this matter of the oversight. We'll see, we'll be advised by the Chair Advocate Bongo and the Committee Secretary on when are we going to, but it appears to be an urgent matter. There's an issue of sabotage to the system. We're going to elections now. If there are certain issues that need to be done by government, this we can attend to. It would be a serious sabotage to the community of the Republic, and as has been indicated. Thanks very much for stepping off this matter. We're releasing all the team led by the minister. We'll deal with the issue of the report and we'll close. Thanks very much. Mr. Matun.
Thank you.
Good day, Chairperson. It's actually Adam Salmon. I'll be dealing with the report, sir.
Mr. Adams, can I assist to be guided by you and Mr. Matonzi? There's a sitting at 2 o'clock, and the report has been circulated. I want to check if there won't be any other day to deal with the report, so that we give members to time to pull off before the sitting at 2, and when it's going to be AT seat, when it's going to be the sitting. I'm not saying you mustn't
reported. I just wanted to ask you and Mr. Matonsi, because we've been here since 9 and there were many issues that we've been dealing with, and members will guide on this item. Can I first start with you, Mr. Adams and Mr. Matonsi? And
I'll request My apologies, Chair. Yeah, I just want to know, are we part of this session as a department?
No. Thanks, Minister. I did indicate that we're releasing you.
Oh, thank you. I didn't hear that. Thank you very much.
No, the minister wants to be part of us, Chair. He's a state minister.
No, please. Okay. On some other things.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Adams and Mr. Matonsi?
Yeah, I think Eddie's got the deadline, but I think the deadline is actually at the end of this week for the submission of reports. It won't take long. I can cover what needs to be covered in this presentation in 5 to 10 minutes. It's essentially just a summary of what was raised by members in the meeting.
Yeah, no. Let's get guidance first. We've raised a point here on the process.
Oh, okay.
We'll allow you, Mr. Matons.
Chairperson, the budget vote debate is on the 19th, which is Wednesday next week, the 19th of May. So next week, Tuesday, in the meeting, we're going to receive briefing from the IEC on their annual report. You'll recall that they did not also present their annual report. So since GPW is not ready, so we'll remove them, and then we can still include this report for adoption on Tuesday, and then it will be ATC the very same day that it will be available on the following day.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I get the indication, and I'll guide what Mr. Adams do. Honorable Mqhini, can I start with you?
Let's move it, Chair. I'm tired.
Honorable Ross? Honorable Ross?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't know if you can see me. I agree to move it. There's quite a few changes. I don't know if it's possible for us to make some of the proposed changes in writing, so that when we come to it next week, it's a quicker process.
Mm-hmm. Honorable Tito?
I'm also seconding my fellow colleagues. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Mulego?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I agree that we must prepare the report so that we have enough time to prepare for the sitting.
Honorable Lizette?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have made some notes in terms of some of the changes that I will suggest, so I will email that through now, and then I agree, let's adopt this next week, Tuesday. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I think there's consensus around the issue. Thank you very much.
Honorable Modise.
Thank you.
Honorable Pillay?
Chair, I agree with the consensus.
Mr. Adams, your comment?
Yes, Chair, I gather the consensus. We will deal with it next week as per the guidance. So.
Okay. The point is that the report, draft report has been read. The issue is the time now that we to give members a cool off for sitting. But secondly, on the corrections and additions they've made to the report. Let's agree that today is Tuesday. Yes, it's Tuesday. By end of Thursday, colleagues, let's
we are done.
Deposit our concerns, not concerns, issues of corrections and additions to report Adams, and Adams will circulate the report at least by Saturday. Give them 2 days to rework on the issues. And on Tuesday, when we come to the meeting, we deal with this matter of the report, and we finish. Is that fair, comrade? Sorry, Mr. Adam.
Sure. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Matos. What is the
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was just going to say for next Tuesday, we're still going to be electing you as a, not you, but I mean, electing someone as an acting chairperson. So my suggestion is that since the chairperson is on a leave, if all members could come to the meeting on Tuesday, firstly, because we have to adopt the report, we need that quorum. Secondly, also that when we elect, I was just going to propose that, no, we elect the acting chairperson until further notice. So that no, we don't have problems going forward. We're in the stock quorum and then we're not able to elect the chairperson. That's all.
Let's agree on the process that we're carrying. We'll elect the acting chairperson by committee. Let's just hold it at that point. Let's not confuse our process. We'll do that at the in our committee meeting for a day. Until we were properly guided, all of us. Any announcements, Mr. Maton?
No, there's no announcement except that no, on Thursday I'm traveling. So members who are going to be submitting issues, matters relating to the report, they must just direct them to Adam. That's all. But I'll be there in the meeting on Tuesday.
No, yes. Thanks, Mr. Maton. And members have extended condolences to you. And your family. Members, thank you very much for attending this meeting. All the issues were dealt with. We'll follow up in all the process that have been dealt with. Where there's urgent issues to be taken, including the oversight, Mr. Matonsi will assist us to process that that point. Thanks very much. The meeting is as adjourned.
Thank you.
Goodbye, colleague.
Thanks, Chair. Goodbye, colleagues.